Steve, thank you. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder, and it's Wednesday. This is part one of our show. You know how to reach us, 312-981-7200. Hi.
Hello. And Steve, yesterday I forgot to ask you how the Paul Green Memorial went yesterday.
It was just lovely. It was wonderful. You know, I've known Paul. I knew Paul for 30 years, and it was great to go back and to see people who we kind of shared in our lives, a lot of older politicians. We were really living some stories, and it just his daughter spoke, his lifelong friend spoke, and it was just a beautiful thing. You know, Paul was just he was just a joyful guy, and every time he would come into a room, he would bring that joy with him. And that joy was there yesterday, so I'm so glad to get a chance to go.
I was thinking, I've been thinking about him a lot in this whole election, and I'm just so sad he can't be around to see the outcome of it.
I'm sure this came up yesterday at his service, Steve, that the irony of all this is he was so engulfed in politics and just loved the ins and outs of it, and to know that this election was just so close and he didn't get to see it through.
Yeah, but you know what? He was into the township elections, too.
Sure.
I mean, Paul was into every election. And
yeah, but
and
this one is
the city,
so different.
Love travel. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
And I needed him today because I did not watch the vice presidential debate last night.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
He would have had a line for you.
I know. And I would have laughed after he said it.
He saw you and said, Wendy, you're going to love this. Listen to this.
We will be talking to the Tribune's Kristen McQuarrie later on.
Yeah, in the second half. Yeah.
Yeah, I did not. I had things to do, and I had it recorded, and then I thought, you know, I don't know if I'm going to watch it yet.
You know, there were four or five times. Oh, hold on, Steve, because I do want to hear this. There were four or five times during the debate yesterday that I said to myself, you know what, I'm going to sit the rest of this out, or including one moment very, very early on where I went, well, this isn't going to work for me. But then I ended up watching the whole, I think it was 93 minutes or 94 minutes. And
did you glean anything?
No, I'm trying to think if there was one real message that came out of it. I'll
tell
you.
Yeah, who's running? That's the message that came out of it. And if did that even come out?
A lot of people were saying last night that a flip ticket with Mike Pence at the top of it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I heard that on both sides yesterday afterwards. I was shocked that Tim Kaine was the more aggressive of the two. I did not see that coming at all. Did
so
you?
Disappointing to me, frankly, because a lot of people say they don't know Tim Kaine. I've been watching Tim Kaine for years, and I like him. And I really thought he was going to bring the likable
right
part to the ticket last night. And, you know, he just jumped out, and then it just was.
What about this? What about this? What about that?
And he was relentless.
Pence started doing it, too, and the moderator really had no control. And over the first half hour, it was just indecipherable.
Yeah.
And I know this is about the presidential candidates, and that's what this was. This wasn't really a vice presidential debate, just looking at stuff that I've
right
seen this morning.
Right.
Did you learn about the candidates and their stances on anything?
I think
little
the religion
bits and
thing
pieces.
The religion thing was nice at the end. I don't know if you stuck around that long, Bill.
I did. I saw the whole thing. During that part of it, and again, just a little background, I'm not a religious person, and it bothers me that church and state are so interwoven into most elections, this one included. I understand what they were going for because it became a discussion about women's rights, which is very, very important. But it always bothers me when faith is that big of an issue in the president, because it doesn't mean anything to me
well,
in terms
you should,
of who the president is.
Okay, but then you should have been encouraged by what Tim Kaine said. You know, he talked about it being Catholic and being opposed to the death penalty, but recognizing that he was the governor of a state where
yep
it was legal.
Right.
And so he did not let his religion interfere with the state law.
And that's important. I mean,
it's totally important.
Every part of it was important. But on the whole, that question of faith in the presidency, that's wasted on me. And I know for a lot of people that's a very important issue, but it's not for
well,
me.
Well, it shouldn't be wasted on you because it can go either way. I mean, it can be for people who feel as you do, it could be a real warning for the next president too, right?
Well,
I mean, if you should pay attention to that to see if you're electing someone who's going to be ruled by his or her religion.
Yeah, I'll tell you where it does come in. Mike Pence has skirted around the issue of exactly how much of creationism and evolution he's a believer in, and that's disturbing to me that in this day and age in 2016 people could still have issues with evolution. It's a fact. I mean, it's not opinion, it's a fact. So that part of it plays in a little bit for me. But as soon as they asked that question, I thought there's 100 better questions that could be asked with just a few minutes left in the debate. I'm not sure this is the one that'll affect me.
Interesting you say that, because I felt like it was one of the few times where they actually settled down and discussed something.
Whether
you agreed with them or not, at least they explored something.
Yeah.
I think this is, you know, because it's the vice presidential debate, the discussion is probably almost over, which is good for Mike Pence because he probably looked better than Tim Kaine. But if the discussion was going to last 3 or 4 days, you know, there were a lot of times when Mike Pence last night said, he didn't say that, he didn't say that, he didn't say that, when he did, and he did, and he did. You know, Kaine trying to make Pence defend Donald Trump on expanding the number of countries with nuclear weapons or other things like that, where Pence just said he never said it. And in some cases he was right, but in many he was not.
Tim Kaine himself was counting, and I can't remember if the count got up to 6 or 7 at the very end, of things where, and it almost was the same rotation over and over, where Tim Kaine would say, I can't believe you're sitting here defending Donald Trump when he said or when he did.
Right.
And then that's when you would get Mike Pence denying it. But then the role now of the fact checkers, who Chris Christie tells us we shouldn't pay attention to because they have their own agenda.
Please.
But Kaine overreached on that, too, because he had so much material, you know, on Elisa Machado or on, you know, Donald Trump said that if abortion is legal, women who get abortion should be punished. He backed up later, but he did say that. But Kaine, I think, leaned too heavily on the Mexican rapist and murderers thing, you know, and
maybe too heavily on the taxes.
And Pence was able to come back and say, well, he also said many of them were good people.
Right, right. The two he tended to go to were the Mexicans being murderers and rapists. And well, then why doesn't he show us the taxes?
The tax returns, right.
So I kept wondering, is that Tim Kaine's strategy, or is that, I mean, I know they have advisors up the yin-yang, as we like to say. So is that a bunch of people saying, hey, rope-a-dope him on those two things. Whenever there's a moment, keep going back to those two issues over and over and over.
I don't know about the Mexican comments, but certainly the tax comments.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they want to keep that going. And that was another one where, you know, he said, we need to know if what Donald Trump, his kids have talked about, he has business dealings in Russia. And Pence said, no, he never said that. But it has been reported.
He did say that.
Well, he did say that. So, all right. So here was a moment where...
Oh, fact-checking. I'm with Chris Christie.
It's overrated. Here was a moment, as aggressive as Tim Kaine was, that I thought he really could have been more aggressive. It was during one of the diatribes about him not releasing his taxes, when Mike Pence just kept saying over and over, he will release his taxes. He will release his taxes. If you're Tim Kaine at that point, you say, well, tell me the exact date. Let's get an exact date down, and then we can stop arguing about it. You tell us the date, and then we'll all be happy. And that never happened. That would have been a great end right then and there.
Yeah, that would have worked.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We have a full show for you, all kinds of stuff on today's show. And again, you can reach us at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN. We came into work today. Now, you already knew that this was happening. And I know this is a story that affects really you and me a lot more than the listeners. I get that. But we found out today, you found out last night or yesterday, that our general manager is stepping down as GM of WGN, Jimmy DeCastro, who's been here for the past, I think, 3.5 years. Does that sound right?
Yep, somewhere he brought me back here to hook up with you again.
Yeah. He has decided to retire, and I didn't know until I got into work. Elif, who's she's filling in for Kevin, still on his honeymoon, said, how about this thing with Jimmy? And at that point, I didn't know what that meant.
Robert Feeder column.
Yeah, he picked it up early this morning, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he will be stepping down at the end of the month. You probably heard toward the end of Steve's show, he had Jimmy in to talk about this decision. I'm sure you'll agree with me. They don't make a lot of people like Jimmy. He's just, he makes this not a job, you know.
He was my first boss at the Loop when I started 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And then he left and he tries different things.
Yeah. And seems to
succeed at everything.
Whatever he tries.
I know.
I don't know what he could tell us he was going to attempt that we wouldn't go, oh, he's going to be the best at that in a few minutes. it's really astounding, like the empire that he has built. And really, aside from radio, the thing I always marvel at him is when he walks in a room, he plays everybody properly. Like he knows He knows what to talk about. He knows when to stop talking. He knows what makes you comfortable. He knows what makes you uncomfortable. He's just a magician at walking in a room and working a room and having everybody, when he leaves the room, go, I wish Jimmy had still been in the room.
Call him Mr. Friday.
He is. He's the most upbeat guy. I mean, seriously, I don't think I've ever encountered a guy. We had a lunch meeting with him. Was it Monday? Where I said to Lise, who was filling in for Kevin that day, we finished having lunch with him. And when we walked out, I said, please understand, I know you're new to radio. If you do this job for 50 years, you'll never have another boss like that guy. He cares and cares and cares and cares, you know?
So that's your fault that he's leaving now after you said that?
I think part of it's my fault. I think it could be partially my fault.
See, I'm scared to try new things. I like comfort. I like things that I can do every day. I like routine.
Yeah.
He does not. He
no.
likes to challenge himself and succeed all the time. So,
yeah.
God, he'll be missed. You know what? We'll see him again.
I'm sure we will.
I started 30 years ago with him. And then he brought me back with you here. We'll see him again.
I know he and Larry were your first bosses. They were my first bosses in radio, too. And I always assumed, because so many times there'd be like I would get a note from one or both of them, or a phone call, or a quick compliment in the hall. Hey, I heard the thing you and Wendy said about this, or you did about that. And I just assume that's how everybody in radio is, that everybody's very complimentary. And if your boss hears something they like, they'll go out of their way to tell you. And it's
just the opposite. I've had people come up to me saying, you know, you said on the air too much. What?
Yeah.
I have a tape. And proceeded to play it.
I know.
Chomper.
Right. A lot of bosses will nitpick. So then when you're on the air, everything is very spontaneous. So then you're second guessing and third and fourth guessing yourself, and you can't do that. And these guys, their attitude is, hey, go be you. We've given you a microphone. We've turned it on for you. Just go be you. And
which makes you want to be a better you. When you have a boss who lets you be you,
yeah,
you try harder.
Yeah.
The only thing he could have done is made a 4-day work week. Then I would have given even more. Imagine all the effort I put into those 4 days
right. Instead
of five.
Oh, well, I wish. Was that on the table at some point?
No,
I didn't even know that was an idea.
Not. But really, if you have, and I know there are terrible bosses out there, and I'm sorry for anyone who has to go to work every day with that, because even if you love your job, if you don't like the guy or girl in charge, it puts a damper on your day big time. I couldn't wait to get into work every day. This place is a fun little place to hang out. It's not even really a job.
Does it ever seem like work?
No.
I mean, whenever.
You're so lucky, Bill.
I know. One of the stations I worked at, I used to come in the side entrance all the time because I didn't want to have to walk past my boss's office because it was always bad news. Not always about me, but it was always some negative. You'd walk
gloom
past
and doom.
There and it was always gloom and doom.
Weren't those your bosses, gloom
yeah,
and doom?
Yeah, for a little while, gloom and doom were my bosses. And I'm just the opposite. Whenever we're upstairs for any reason, you go out of your way to see him and just get that encouragement. And I wish everybody could experience that in a boss, because it's what a feeling it is, you know?
What a feeling.
I know. So when I got the news today, it was like somebody punched me in the stomach. You know, I'm just walking around going, oh, I hope that's not true. But it is true. So.
Well, we wish him the best, although he doesn't need our luck. He seems to be pretty successful at everything he touches.
Yeah.
So Jimmy DeCastro, the Deacon, hey now, good luck to you.
Yep. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll interview new GMs. That's a segment we do on the show. Just come on by, and we'll talk to you. We'll look at
Jimmy
your resume.
Who?
Yeah, that's how quickly things happen. A quick break, and then more show. Steve has the news in a minute. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy, and we're at 312-981-7200. Can I tell you about what I think is one of the most ultimate and most terrifying scams I've ever heard of in my whole life?
I'm not a big fan of the scam.
Well, at some point, everybody has probably received, there's a couple of strands of these. There's the email from some Nigerian prince who has a whole bunch of money that you can get.
I got a big payday from that guy.
Did you get a lot of money from the Nigerian prince?
Yes.
Did you?
I think I have a date with him coming up sometime soon.
I think that's the artist formerly known as Nigerian Prince. I think you're going out with him in a few weeks. Also, I've received this email a couple of times from somebody, and what happens here is, I'll tell you the background and then how it pays off. Somebody's email is compromised, their email address, so you'll get an email from somebody that you know.
You.
From, it, sometimes it's me, and it'll say, I'm in Cincinnati. I decided to take a couple-day trip to Cincinnati. It doesn't have to be Cincinnati. It can be any city. And I got robbed, and I don't have any money.
And now, I lost my passport because I was online on Facebook, and someone I went to high school, Wendy, it's Rita. Mm-hmm. I'm really in trouble. I was robbed, lost my passport. Could you please send me money? And I'm having a conversation thinking it's really her.
Sure.
I'm like, Rita, listen, I haven't talked to you in 20 years. Yeah. I know we're friends on Facebook, but no. And then I, before I did anything further, I sent her a private message, and she said, no, that is not me. I've been hacked.
Yep.
But I totally fell for it. It was like an instant message.
Right, right. It's, well, it's becoming, sadly, it's becoming easier and easier to do. And there's other versions of it. There's business versions of it where somebody calls and they say, we're your bank.
IRS.
Or we're the IRS.
I'm still getting them.
Yeah, on your phone. I get it once a month. And,
yeah, I get it like twice a week.
The IRS is going to, there's serious problems with the IRS. You got to call them. You got to send them money. All right. Well, now this lady, Wendy Mueller, can top all of that. Wendy Mueller, listen to this. Wendy Mueller was standing at the copper sink in her gorgeous, historic Leesburg, Virginia home last Wednesday afternoon when the knife she was holding slipped and cut her thumb, and then the phone rang. It wasn't a number she recognized, but distracted by her bleeding thumb, she answered it.
That's the worst time to answer the phone.
Right.
Seriously.
Right.
Even if you do recognize
right.
it, put the pressure on the thumb.
You would think. She heard screaming, and it sounded like her 23-year-old daughter's voice begging for help. So she's in a bad situation.
Oh, man.
She gets a phone call. She picks up the phone. There's a lot going on because she had cut her thumb, and she hears screaming on the other side of the line. Then an unfamiliar voice announced, "We have your daughter."
Oh, my God.
Right. Wendy Mueller, who was the victim of a fake kidnapping scam last week at her home in Leesburg, Virginia, pictured here. I'm holding up the picture so everybody can see her picture.
Thank you.
What followed next was 5 hours of hell. Police call it a virtual kidnapping. It's an old scam that is having a renaissance across the country and particularly in the Washington region. The caller targets affluent areas and finds enough information online to make their ruse seem plausible. Mueller, who's 59 years old, had no idea that she was being played. She believed that her daughter's life was at stake and did everything she could.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Why didn't she text her daughter or try to call her daughter?
I've thought about that myself, and I think because in the heat of the moment where you hear a scream, and even though you say to yourself, is that my daughter's voice or is it not? Because it's all happening so fast, you assume the worst.
But wouldn't you text to go, are you okay?
Immediately. Right.
Because even if she is kidnapped, I mean, the chances are they're not going to let her have her phone.
Yeah.
But
right.
I mean, I would still go,
right.
What's going on?
Yeah.
I would do that text. Are you okay? Is everything okay?
That's certainly the rational next step. But I wonder if in the heat of the moment with everything happening so fast, you even think ahead. You just go, wow, I'm hearing a scream that could be my daughter. And there's a guy saying he's got my daughter. The kidnapper told Mueller to put her phone on speaker, to get her purse and her phone charger, and to get into the car. How much cash can you get right now? He asked her. What is your daughter worth? Anything? Everything?
Oh, my God.
How about $10,000? She replied.
Can you get that at an ATM? Isn't there a limit?
There
like
is
500
a limit.
Or something?
Yeah, it actually talks about how the limit that's coming up, about how the limit plays into this a little bit. The voice on the other line was calm and eloquent with a faint accent, but an Americanized command of the language, warning her to not try to get anyone to help her. Otherwise, they would kill her daughter. Her youngest child attends college hundreds of miles away in a town that's a little rougher on the edges. Mueller had no way of knowing if her daughter was truly safe. They told me that they were actually targeting someone else, someone that they would be able to get a lot of money for, but they said that my daughter intervened when they tried to grab him.
It's a good story, I got to tell you.
It is an interesting little twist. You know, it's just enough to have you guessing, right?
Mm-hmm.
She says, I was terrified. They told me that they would not hesitate to kill my daughter. The caller told Mueller that he had hacked her phone and knew exactly where she was going. And then for hours, he instructed her to go to small offices and stores across North Virginia where she wired the maximum amount from each area, that's $1,900, to the name and address in Mexico that he had given her. She went from Leesburg to Resden to Herndon to Arlington County to Seven Corners, crisscrossing northern Virginia until nightfall, following his directions turn by turn. She kept asking to talk to her daughter, and they kept promising me, as soon as you send the last one, then you can talk to her again. Even though that seems like, oh, there's something going on here, you're so afraid at that moment.
Oh, I would believe that.
Right? Yeah. He described the buildings in front of her or the fields that she had passed, almost as if he was following her. She thought that's another weird twist to it, because then you go, wow, this has got to be legit. He knows exactly where I am.
He's right? watching me, yeah. But he scoped it out before.
She thought of flagging somebody down, but he could hear every move that she was making.
Because she was on the speakerphone the whole time she was doing this.
The whole time.
Oh, my God.
That's why he quickly said at the very beginning, make sure you have your charger with you, too, so that that wouldn't pulse out on her. After every deposit, he told her to rip up the receipts. When he didn't hear the ripping sound once, he noticed that. So she grabbed another piece of paper and ripped that. He was satisfied, and she stuffed the whole receipt into her purse. I'll call you mom, you call me son, he told her, and she began crying. Stop crying, mom, he told her.
Oh, God.
This is as creepy as can be. He talked to her throughout the whole ordeal, making sure that he had her attention for every moment. He told her that he was a professional and part of a group of kidnappers, which he described as a huge organization who do this all the time, and that they would kill if they needed to. He said that they put the headphones on the daughter so that she could hear everything, so that she would know if her mom did anything to cause her death.
Oh.
That makes it even worse. At each step in between answering the questions, she thought about how to ask for help. What if she wrote a note to the clerk, but one word from the clerk and he would hear that? At each money wire window or international mini mart he sent her to, the clerks didn't speak English very well. One question was, I can't read this, and her daughter could be dead if that were to come up. It was fortune, she said.
God, this is horrifying.
Every part of this is horrifying. And none of it was true, as it turns out. Wendy Mueller's daughter was in a class at that time, working on an artsy movie poster. The caller, throughout, was a scam artist. Scores of families have been targeted in California, especially in Beverly Hills, since last year. Then it happened in New York, then it happened in Texas, and now there's a rash of these taking place in the Washington region. In the scheme, individuals call claiming to have kidnapped a family member, said Prince William County's police in May. While no actual kidnapping is actually taking place, the callers often use co-conspirators to convince their victims of the legitimacy of the threat. Now, again, we're fairly rational people, but if this happened, even though you would want to believe it wasn't true, you would also not want to take any chances.
I know, but I'm telling you, Bill, even while on the speakerphone, you can text somebody. I would have to find myself just a quick little, what's going on? Are you okay?
Sure, sure.
And I, oh my God. And then you have to worry too, because if they've taken her, they have her phone, and
right.
they're seeing that.
Right.
And perhaps they could text back, yes, I'm fine, Mom, why?
Right.
Or whatever.
Yeah, you don't know the parameters of what exactly they're able to do at that point.
That's why you need a code word.
Oh, that's not a bad... Well,
I'm not kidding.
So then you say to the person on the phone, ask my daughter the code word?
No, no, no. You text your daughter and say, what is going on? Are you okay? And then if she says yes, you say, what's our code word?
Oh, okay.
Although then if she's at gunpoint,
yeah.
they're going to say, what's your code word,
right.
dummy?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have the answers. I got to read more Encyclopedia Brown books.
This is terrifying because, honestly, think about it. Throughout the course of any week or month or year, you get X amount of things that you say to yourself, well, I'm 99.9% sure that this is a scam. There's not really a prince in Nigeria who needs my money. One of my best friends from high school hasn't really been overseas and lost his passport. But with something like your child's life on the line, even though you want to think you're thinking rationally, you're still going, but what if I'm wrong? What if they really do have my kid?
So do we have an ending? Can we take a break? How did it end?
Yeah,
how
I've got
did
a little bit more of the
guys?
Story. I got a little bit more for you. All right, so that's coming up next. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
My microphone would not go on. Is that a sign or what?
It's all the clowns. The clowns are messing up everything, Wendy.
My off button was stuck.
I don't know what to tell you. We're telling you the story about Wendy Mueller. Last week, she received a frightening message from a potential kidnapper explaining to her by way of the telephone, after she heard a scream, that that scream was her daughter's scream and that he was holding her hostage. She had to give him $10,000. She had to drive all around Virginia and wire him money in Mexico. And then he would let her talk to her daughter. Turns out it's all a scam. It's a hoax.
A pretty elaborate one.
A very elaborate one. Here's how the story ends, Wendy. Her ordeal didn't end until 8:30 at night after she had wired a total of $9,100 to the scammers. And then she got a text from her daughter. The text said, "Hey, guys, look what I was doing in class today." Mueller stopped cold. Wait, her daughter was okay? But then the photo of her project pop up. It was an artsy movie poster of a young woman in distress in the film.
So they just took like a picture off the internet or took a picture of something, a woman in distress.
That's... Yeah. Yeah. But it turns out even that was a coincidence, and it confused Mueller even further, because it was actually a poster that her mother had made. And it was a poster for the movie Snatched, which, again, huge coincidence because there were scammers pretending that she had been kidnapped. So that confused her even more. She was able to keep the caller occupied. That's the potential kidnapper.
Did she get this text while she was talking on the speakerphone?
Yeah. She was able to keep the caller occupied long enough to get a couple more texts from her daughter to make sure that she was safe. Finally, Mueller hung up, and that was it. The man never called back. He had already persuaded her to wire her thousands of dollars, $9,100. It was a total brainwashing, she said. She went to the Leesburg police and reported it. Detective Doug Shaw, who interviewed Mueller about the case, said that it is still open and the FBI is looking into it. Police were able to verify that the numbers and addresses that she were given had been used in past scams. Also, in the article, I didn't read you this part, but it goes into in-depth ways of saying how a scammer like this could find information from you online at almost any place like Facebook and get just enough information to keep this going. You get the couple of names of people that she would know.
Yeah.
And you throw those out
there. Showed you I did that yesterday. There's a texter who's very rude to us.
Yeah.
And I got their information, their address.
Yeah.
It took 2 minutes.
If that. He also said that it's easy to tell online that this area of Virginia is one of the wealthiest areas in the country, one of the wealthiest places to pull this scam, because the people have a lot of money, and obviously they're just thinking, with their hearts more than their heads, thinking a loved one is being kidnapped, I have to give them what they want.
I still would have texted, because what if she texted and it's like, what's going on? Are you okay? And I talked about a code word, and I didn't think it through because you wouldn't text, "What is the code word?"
Right.
That's kind of stupid. But, Vincent, you have a good code word or phrase?
Yeah, if somebody calls up like something like that, and you say, "Well, how are you doing?" You come back with something frivolous like, "Oh, I'm having a drink at Billy's Bar." And that means everything's okay.
So something
if
conversational.
Says, "Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. Things are nicer that..." You know right away that there's something wrong.
Right. That seems doable.
See, I'd get confused. Somebody else has texted, example, "How you doing, Wendy?" "I'm fine." And then if the response is, "I'm fine," something is wrong. The word...
That's confusing.
That sets them off that there's something wrong.
Yeah, see, I would just text back, "I'm in big trouble."
What was the movie where somebody was being held hostage and they put the person on the phone? I can't remember what movie this is, but they said, "I just want you and Dad and Chris to know that I'm okay." And then there's nobody named Chris in the family, so that alerted them to the fact that...
Oh, that's good.
I can't remember what movie that was, but I thought, if I'm ever in trouble, I'll use that tactic.
Huh.
Except then Terry would spend all her time going, "Wait, which Chris? You know three different Chrises. Is it your sister-in-law, Chris, your friend, Chris, or our neighbor, Chris?"
You guys, we can't remember passwords, let alone remembering the face.
Because
somebody said you would have to have a code question such as, "Do you have enough gas?"
Yeah.
And if she would answer yes, that means she's in trouble. But why would that mean she's in trouble? Do you have a predetermined question?
Yeah, you would need that.
I can't think of a good code word. I'm not a good coder. Kate, this happened to your son?
This happened to my mom. Hello, you guys. I love you guys. I'm on the air. Oh, my God.
Oh, thank you, Kate.
Kate, we love you right back.
thanks. She's down in Paris, Tennessee, and she got a phone call. This guy, hi, Grandma, this is Sean. Can you go? The guy knew the store to go to get these debit cards or something. They wanted like $3,000 or something like that. Go here and get 500 here. Go here and get 500 there. Well, my mom's all freaked out. She's like, well, okay, Sean, you know, I'll get back with you. Well, she called me right away. And I'm freaking out. I'm like, my son was in a car accident. He, you know, now he's in jail. So I'm trying to get a hold of my son. He was at work. So this was a scam that was, and this was going on. This was about a year ago. And they were targeting senior citizens. And
that's like my disgusting. Mom was just,
yeah. Yeah. And then the one thing that caught my mom is that my son calls my mom Graham, not Grandma.
Oh.
I'm
like, well, Mom. Yeah. So that kind of, my mom's pretty sharp, you know. And she's like, oh, no, this doesn't sound right. But yeah, I just want to make that comment before the news.
Kate, really quick, did you guys follow up? Did you try to pursue the people that were doing this to you?
No, she didn't because I think the number came up unknown or something.
Sure, yeah.
You know, but she answered her phone, you know, it came up unknown, so she answered it, and you know, but no, she never did. Although, you know, she might have let the local police know. I'm not sure, but there was a thing in the paper about a year ago saying that, hey, watch out, there's scammers out there hitting senior citizens. You know, maybe something pops up on Facebook.
Seriously, you know, don't answer the phone. Seniors, if you're listening, don't answer the phone unless you know it's programmed in and you know who it is. Seriously, they'll leave a voicemail.
Right. And if they don't, you know.
Wasn't that important?
Right, absolutely. Well, listen, I know you guys got to get to the news, but I listen to you guys every day. Wendy, I'm telling you. You and I got to go out and have a couple beers because you just crack me up.
All right. It's hump day. Maybe we could go out tonight.
Yeah, when you guys do the clown thing again, come out to Naperville sometime.
All right.
Tell your mother to get me a card with $500 on it, and she can
send
pay
it
her
over.
A tip.
Yeah, right. See ya. Send it to WGN.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks
Kate.
Really quickly, we have to get this one in. Dan, you have a good code word?
Hey, guys. I love your show.
Hey.
Thank you, Dan.
Basically, it's just a simple question. We'd say, you know, hey, I'm sorry, I'm spacing out. Did you feed the cat today? And we don't own a cat.
Oh, so that would be a sign that something's wrong.
If it was, the cat's fine, then, you know, we know all is good. If it's the no, I didn't, then we know we have a problem.
Dan, how about this one? I just thought of this one. Are you currently being kidnapped?
So, thank you, Dan. You don't even have to answer that. Bill, I would know if you were in trouble if you texted me, I love dogs.
Right. That would be.
I'd be like, oh, my God, let's get the authorities.
Right. Something's wrong. All right. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then Dr. John Duffy joins us. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. 312-981-7200. Phone number, text number. And we are talking to Dr. John Duffy, who comes every other week, clinical psychologist, author of The Available Parent, and a brand new name to your podcast.
Brand new name to my podcast, Undue Anxiety.
And why?
Because what I'm finding is that everybody I'm talking to in my practice and on the podcast is suffering from some kind of anxiety, whether it's in their family, whether it's in their profession, whether it's in their marriage. And when we share the stories, I think we feel a little less isolated, the taboos go away a little bit more, and the anxiety level comes down a little bit.
We all have it.
We all have
it. Even you, Bill.
But a little bit, wouldn't you agree that a little bit of anxiety is actually kind of healthy? It drives you. It does to some extent, doesn't it, John?
You got to have a little. You do. Otherwise, you're kind of like just laid out on the couch. You know, I think anxiety is motivating to a point.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, a point at the top of the curve where it starts to slide and you're less motivated. You're less effective in your life. But absolutely, you need some of it. That's where our juice comes from.
Yeah.
That's where our energy and motivation comes from.
Absolutely.
To do things. Yes.
I get that. All right. A lot of times we talk to you about our children, but today we wanted to focus more on marriages, on relationships. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I've been working with a lot of marriages lately, longstanding marriages. And I was thinking, well, the three of us, we've all been married a long time, perfectly, blissfully, happily, I think all three, right?
Most of the time.
Right.
Bill just looked at me because most of the time is true, but it's not always perfect, is it?
Well, I don't think it's always perfect for anybody. And I've worked a lot of people lately who've been struggling with their longstanding marriages because, you know, so many things come along after the wedding day, you know, kids and careers and households and financial issues, things that we don't anticipate on the day we get married that kind of take us away from paying attention to this person that we married. And sometimes we then bring our worst to that person.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll be on all day and we'll be, you know, kind of glad-handing and nice to people. And then we'll be crabby and angry and upset when we finally get home to the person we love the most on the planet.
Sure.
You know?
I was taught that the stranger is always right. That was my mom. She was always nice to other people. And then at home, you let your guard down. And I think sometimes that's your comfortable place and that's where you're able to be more honest.
Yeah.
But sometimes you shouldn't be as honest as you are.
Well, you want to leave enough room for fondness and admiration to grow or at least hold steady in your marriage. And a lot of times that's what falters is there's either so much complaining or so much togetherness that you don't leave space to look at your spouse and say, boy, they've really grown. I'm really fond of them. And I really admire them. And if that's missing, it's really hard to find the energy to keep the marriage going happily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can stay together and people do it all the time, but not always perfectly happily.
Is it common for your marriage to change when kids come along? Because I feel like I've neglected my husband because my energy is totally into the kids right now.
I think that any parent would agree with that completely, that immediately, that moment, everything changes, right? The shift, the focus changes. Your marriage becomes, for decades, at least in part, in large part, about raising these kids,
sure.
You know? And I think sometimes when our kids become teenagers and become a little more independent, then we start to look at each other like, okay, in the not too distant future, this empty nest is coming along. It's you and me again. You know, do we still have what we had? Can we put that back together?
Yeah. This fits into exactly one of the things I wanted to ask you. Both of our daughters graduated from high school and started college, one last year, one this year.
Right.
Several of the couples in our circle, some of them closer friends, some of them just kind of orbital friends, have split up in the last year as their kids have moved beyond high school and into college. That has been the end of their relationship.
That's a bummer. They finally have time to do something together.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I've been looking in a mixed way, looking forward to this where it's just the two of us, but for many of them, that was the last nail in the coffin, I guess.
And that's what I'm seeing more and more of. That's part of the reason I thought, well, this would be a good thing to talk about, because I realize that a lot of people, either it's the kids that keep them together, you know, that mutual interest in we're going to raise these kids, we're going to raise them well, or, you know, we don't have anything in common once we're alone and it's just the two of us, you know, rattling around this house, we forgot to kind of pay any attention to this relationship,
right.
You know? And it's not very good modeling for kids, right? We want to show our kids, you know, like, this is what it means to be happy. So we're going to go out sometimes. We're going to go out without you sometimes. And you're going to see us be affectionate with one another sometimes, even if it's gross.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I love their ew. Yeah. Get a room. We have a room. We own all the rooms in this house.
Yeah, I think if your kids say get a room once in a while, you're probably doing the marriage right.
Oh, yeah, probably. You
know? Our kids sometimes, especially Dylan, he's 13, and he will say, why don't you and Dad have a date night?
Yeah.
And I said, really? Because he notices, you know, the effort. I was pregnant when it was our first year anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
So poor Jim has been neglected. And now the kids can do more on their own. And with the kids telling you to do a date night, that's awesome.
It is. And I think kids recognize if the marriage isn't going great, they want it to, right? It throws them off center if they suspect. Now, I'm working with a couple kids now who are worried about their parents' relationship. And that takes a lot of focus for a kid because it shifts their whole world. And if mom and dad are out there and dating, I think they feel a little comfort like, okay, I think that
everything's
part is
cool
going to be okay.
With them.
Yeah.
John, when I was a kid, my parents had an incredible marriage. There was never a night, I never went to bed ever thinking they're going to get divorced. There was never a single day or night in my life that I thought their marriage could crumble. And because of that, I mean, I had a bunch of friends whose parents did either separate or divorce, or whatever, and the amount of stress that just that mere idea, not even them getting a divorce, just the idea that they could at some point break up, that would just destroy a kid.
Absolutely. And think about how nice that was for you, right? Never to have that as a concern.
Yeah.
I happen to have the same upbringing. I never really, my parents didn't have a perfect marriage, but I knew it was going to be okay.
Yeah.
And there was something about that where it's like, okay, now I can focus on just being a kid.
Right.
Where I'm working with like 14, 15, 16 year olds who grow up real fast because they feel like, you know, either my parents are going to break up or I've got to do something to hold this together.
And a lot of pressure.
Kids, yeah. A lot of kids will take that responsibility on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, that said, I'm feeling sorry for all the kids out there whose parents have gotten divorced.
Right.
There still can be happiness after that.
It sometimes impressively. You know what I mean? Like I've seen divorced parents parent really, really well. And selflessly, in a way, you know, like even if they don't get along at all, they can co-parent together beautifully. And I think that's such an impressive model. And that does model something cool for the kids, right? That you can kind of compartmentalize your relationship enough that you do what you have to do, right?
Right.
And you're you can love each other to the extent that we're taking care of these kids together.
Yeah.
Even if we're not going to be married for the rest
sure.
of our lives. We can honor that part of each other that this is our mission together, and it's a life sentence, and that's a good thing.
Dr. John Duffy's our guest. If you want to jump in on this, you can easily at 312-981-7200. We'll pick this up in just a few moments. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Talking to Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist. Get his book, The Available Parent. It's awesome. And listen to his podcast on WGNplus.com or his website. It's drjohnduffy.com, correct?
Correct.
All right. The pod gasp is the Halloween edition that John just finished. It's frightening.
And the new name of the John Duffy podcast?
Undue Anxiety.
Love it. Do you have any tips about marriages? I know that, you know, everybody says, oh, we get married and we live happily ever after. And that is the goal.
Right.
And you can attain that goal or achieve that goal. But there is some work involved, isn't there?
It requires a little maintenance. And part of it is we talked about dating a little while ago. And sometimes we can protect time for a date night, do that once a week. If you can do that, great. One way or another, find a way to face each other and look each other in the eye. What I'm hearing from a lot of couples is, oh, yeah, we never do that. Like if we're together, we're tired and we're watching a TV, we're facing the same screen, but we never like look each other in the eye.
Really?
So, yeah. So it's odd little things like that. Like, you know, take a moment, look each other in the eye, talk about something other than the business of the household.
Politics.
Or politics, right? You know, something that's just benign. Talk about movies. Talk about something that you both enjoy, you know, and do some things you both enjoy. A moment of affection in the midst of a given day. We sometimes, over time, let that lapse, right?
Yeah.
And we think, yeah, that's a Saturday night thing, you know. Even if it doesn't have to be overly intimate, it doesn't have to be everything, but, you know, just a 10-second, literally 10-second kiss or hug changes the dynamic of a relationship in a given day. So
sure.
Just a little bit of that. And if you're feeling resentful, don't let the resentments seethe. You know, like talk it out. Talk it out instead of just sitting on it and kind of creating that bit about, you know, the ball and chain or he's such a pain in the neck. And, you know, like these things that we say about our spouses to other people that are terrible,
yeah.
You know. So get rid of the resentment and talk it out.
You know, it was a good idea. We Kevin, our producer, got married about a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
And we attended the wedding, and they were talking about how they had decided, they mentioned this, they told everybody this, that they each had a word that they came up with, which was going to be the worst word that they could ever call each other. And both words were very tame. There weren't any
dingus.
Horrible. Yeah.
And I can't remember
what the other
one
was. But I thought, I'm listening to that going, that's a pretty good idea. If you can stick to that, that's a very solid
dingle
idea.
Was the other one, Elif? Elif's sister married Kevin Richter,
yeah.
So it was Dingus and Dingle.
I think so.
Who are my attorneys, by the way?
I'm
great
sorry,
guys.
Dummy. Yeah.
Oh, dummy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, so that's the worst.
They'll go beyond
you think
that.
They'll go worse
yeah.
than that?
But the intention is pretty good,
yeah.
Right? It's as a starting intention, and maybe, you know, 5 years down the road, you remind each other, hey, I think we've gone beyond dingus. Why
yeah.
don't we scale back to what we promised each other 5 years ago?
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Boy, and Jim's praying for dingus, the things I call him. And in their vows, didn't they both say, and Elif, remind me that they're going to kiss each other goodnight every night?
Yeah, that is key.
And you know what? You go. We went through a phase where we were going to bed at different times and kind of forgot about it. And we brought that back because it just makes everything okay when you lay your head on the pillow.
And that's you want to end the day and start the day if you can on that kind of positive note, right? Because you chose to spend your life with this person. So you want to remind yourself that this is a special relationship to you. And to feel a little gratitude for it, to really give it some consideration once in a while, does it a lot of good. It feeds it, you know, instead of taking away from it, which we do way too often.
Yeah.
Want to take this call?
Please.
Mark's on the line. Dr. John Duffy. You can go to drjohnduffy.com.
I am so happy to be talking with John and you guys. And I know John very well, and he's a brilliant guy. Here's a question that I have, though. I am in a group of people who live around us whose kids have gone to college or moved on. And I see the parents, the friends of ours, lose a connection. They don't know what to do with each other. You know, and how do you answer to that? I think my wife and I have figured it out. You know, we have date night and we have our special shows, but how do you get that connection?
Well, knowing you, Mark, and knowing your wife, you guys have figured it out, and you've got these, you've established these interests in common. You did that, I think, while your kids were younger, and you do it now. And I think that's what a lot of people need to do is find things that they have in common, or kind of like be willing to accommodate one another. So, you know, okay, I'm going to pick date night this week. You pick it next week. And then we'll make it playful again. We'll make it fun again as if we are dating anew because, you know, like it's exciting. It's fun when you finally have an empty nest that you have the option of going out. We were just talking about this on a Tuesday night. Like, oh, we don't have to be here. There's no homework we have to help with. We can just go out. And so take advantage of that and really intentionally redefine your relationship.
I think is there a problem with investing way too much into your kids as time goes along as when they're in the home?
I don't think you can invest too much in your kids. I think you can invest too little in your marriage, you know, and I think you most of us have enough energy, maybe all of us, to do both. I think, you know, when it's positive energy, you have an awful lot to spend. When it's negative energy, you get tapped out.
Mark, keep it going.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
You think back about the first date that you went on with Terry, or you with Julie, and me and my husband. It is very awkward because you don't know each other that well yet, but that adrenaline and that heart palpitation is so exciting, and I hope that people can experience that again and get to know them again in that same feeling. Awkward? Yeah, maybe.
Right, right.
But the most exciting part of your relationship was kind of when it started.
Yes, yeah. A couple weeks ago, Julie and I went to a wedding, and she bought some new dresses and things to try on to see how she looked. And at one point, she walked down the stairs. We've been married 25 years next month, and I was kind of like, whoa. Like, you know, and I think you need those moments once in a while. Like, man, I'm a lucky guy after 25 years, you know, that you look like that and you're with me, you know.
Right.
And I think we need to allow ourselves to feel that kind of the butterflies once again, you know, because I think those dissipate way too early in marriages. And then we're just kind of just in business together. And that's the last thing we want to be.
Yep.
It does seem like that. So when the kids leave, get that awkward feeling again. Get to know each other once again.
Exactly.
Bring the butterflies back, I tell you.
We need more butterflies. John, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
That's Dr. John Duffy. Again, John, the new podcast name is
Undo Anxiety.
Yep.
It's great. Give it a listen, because even if it's something that you're not dealing with precisely, listening to your clients talk, it's so real, it's genuine, and you learn something from each and every one.
And I learned something from each and every one, so yes.
Good. Everybody wins. Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys.
We'll take a very quick break, and then Kim Gordon has the news for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I always feel good when Dr. John Duffy leaves.
He has
not that
effect.
I don't mean it that way. I mean
that
I
he's
feel,
been here.
Yeah, because I just feel comforted.
Right, sure. He brings that. That's one of his skill sets.
Why don't you bring it?
I don't have that. Can I? I want to bring up something that is, I will admit, borderline ridiculous.
Oh, okay.
I know.
I'm sitting down.
I'm the one who already knows this. You don't know this yet, but I know how ridiculous this is. At home, we have a computer at our house. I'm not bragging, but a couple years ago, we purchased a computer and it's at our house.
The Commodore?
The Commodore 64. It's the finest computer money can buy.
I couldn't remember the number.
as up-to-date as up-to-date can be. I'm currently having a problem with the keypad, and it's not a problem yet, but the, you know, where you type, where all the letters are, because the D is worn out. The letter D is worn out. Now, I know by process of elimination that that's the letter D, but it's almost completely gone, the letter D.
So the little white letter on it.
Yeah, but I know that it's a D because I know where all the letters are, so it's not a problem. But if it happens to a bunch of letters, then it could become a problem. But now look what's going on here at work on my keyboard at the letter D. It's almost completely gone. Now, I don't
I don't even see the D.
It's almost gone. Look, it would be right there.
Oh, it
there.
Looks like an I thought that was an L.
Yeah, because I've worn it down. I'm not using the letter D more often than any other letter.
Yes, you
I mean,
are.
Maybe slightly.
Have
but
you
not...
never played Wheel of Fortune?
No.
Although that isn't one of the letters. It's R, S, T, L, and N. Yeah, it looked like Nestle, kind of. That's how I would always remember it.
No, I don't play Wheel of Fortune. I just, you know.
No, I mean, like, those are the letters that are in most words, but...
Your more common letters? D isn't one of them.
Yeah, it must be.
Why am I... I don't press harder when I hit D.
You know what it is?
What?
That's one of the... I'm trying to remember my typing class. How's the K looking on that?
Every other letter is sparkly clean. It looks like this keyboard could last. And at home, I could probably go another 5 to 10 years... But for some reason, and I can't for the life of me figure it out.
You know, you can get a new keyboard for about $10.
Is that how much they are? But I'll burn through another D. The
I know
keyboard
what
it I have,
is.
I bought a year and a half ago.
I have a theory.
What?
When you are typing, you're right-handed?
I'm ambidextrous, Wendy. You know that.
Oh, my God.
You know I'm ambidextrous.
Which hand? All right, whatever.
Which hand do I type with?
No, I want to just say I am right-handed, so my right hand is kind of up and moving more than my left hand.
Yeah.
And if you're resting your fingers on the FDSA like you did in typing class, your finger is constantly on the D button. It's kind of relaxed and sitting there.
I don't rest them on there because I would accidentally hit them continuously. So when I'm not using... Although when you're typing, you're kind of not, it's nonstop. There's no downtime.
You don't type that quickly.
6 words a minute. I'm not patting myself on the back here, but I get 6, sometimes 7 words a minute. That's not bad.
I just am sitting here with my fingers on the keyboard, and my middle finger is kind of...
It's pointing at me.
No,
hey.
It's kind of resting on the D. I know you move all the way around, but when I'm... You know, just kind of browsing.
Right.
My middle finger is resting
on the
D.
Just goes automatically to the D?
I wonder if that's why it wears out quicker.
But if that were true, wouldn't almost everybody be wearing out their D key?
Well, look there and look at your computer in front of you now and the one at home.
I should bring in the one I have at home because it's almost...
Now we're playing show and tell?
I'm not bragging. It's almost laughable. It's as though I bought a keyboard without the letter D. And who would do that?
If it was a deal, you would.
Right. All right. If I'm saving big money, I might. But I use the letter D as often as anybody, not more often or less often. But for some reason, I keep wearing them down. And I think that's the reason I think our boss, Jimmy DeCastro, is leaving. I think.
Maybe. Look at this. I have gone to GameSpot.com, and they're talking about the letters that wear out quickly, and D is one of them. Do you play video games on your computer?
No. No, I have a separate game unit for that.
How old are you?
I'm going to be 11 in November.
All right, if anybody else has a worn-out D.
I can't. It doesn't make sense. Like, I know the letters you just mentioned earlier are your more common letters. Like, R's and E's, I can't get enough of them. I'm using R's and E's all day long.
Well, somebody, 630, says my keyboard is missing ESDCNMKL. And somebody wants
That's
to know.
Almost all of them.
Yeah, I'd get a new keyboard. Again, you can get them for $10. You can even get a wireless one for about $30.
Oh.
What on earth has Bill been Googling? I think the X's
Dr.
would be
Dre.
Worn out on yours.
You know, I have 2 Dr. Dre fan sites that I operate, so I use those letters all the time. I guess that ties in.
So weird, Bill. The D on my laptop is almost gone, too.
Isn't that crazy?
Get a label maker and label the ones that are fading.
You know what's funny is that it wasn't yesterday. It was 2 days ago, as the D is almost completely gone. There's like a speck. It looks like it's like a period or something where the D would be. So I was thinking, what do I need to do now so it doesn't look like I'm that kid at school with tape on his glasses? Like, if somebody comes to my house and they see that I've made my own letter D key, it's going to look ridiculous. I know you made a clock, but
it
looks like...
I could make a D for you.
Would you do that for me? Am I asking too much?
No,
I just need one key.
Somebody says it's the angle of the keystroke.
Because
you're not going
maybe
dead on like the other ones.
Yeah, maybe.
Go to Amazon and get replacement letters for your keyboard.
Do they do
I
that?
Did.
You can just buy one?
Oh, my God. The
you can
shipping
just buy
would
one?
Be more than going to get a new keyboard.
I'm just
going to
get a new keyboard. That's all I'm going to do.
Problem solved.
I'm going to have to.
I want to know if somebody else has a D missing.
I'm in the market for a slightly used D. If somebody has one out there, again, it's for the Commodore 64.
Call Sesame Street.
Today's show is brought to you by the letter D. I may have to do that, Kim.
I would think they have a lot hanging around there.
I know they do. It's the Children's Television Workshop. All right.
I want to tell you.
Believe me, I know how stupid that sounds, but I'm at home the other night, and I'm looking at it, and I'm going, why are all the other letters, they look like I just bought the keyboard, every other letter. The letter D, though, just worn to shreds.
Here's a Logitech wireless keyboard, $24.99 at Best Buy.
All right. Put one on hold for me. I'll pick it up on the way home.
An Insignia USB keyboard where you plug it in. Do you want to plug it in?
Yeah.
$9.99.
That's not bad at all.
It's not bad.
How idiotic would it look if I just went to any electronics store and said, I just want to purchase the letter D, and I explained my story? Would that be ridiculous? It would be, right? If I just went to Best Buy today and I said, look, I know you sell entire keyboards. I don't need a whole keyboard. I just need the letter D.
You are trying to not do business with everyone for the rest of your life. The dry cleaner,
right.
Everywhere you go.
Right.
You're totally Larry David. You're ruining it for yourself at everywhere
you go. I don't
want
to ruin it for myself. I need the people at, I think I have a Logitech at home. I think that's who provided
it. Just get a new one.
All right. If they're $10, I will. I had no idea they were that inexpensive.
You can even go wireless like we have right here. So if you want to move it around.
I don't trust that.
You don't trust that?
I'm not good with wireless stuff. I need stuff to be hooked up so that when it doesn't work, I go, well, it's obviously the connection is bad.
Paul has a solution to your problems. Paul, you're a genius. What is it?
Well, thank you. No, I'm not a genius, but you can tell what my password is on my laptop at home because all those keys are worn smooth either.
Oh, that's a good thing.
Oh.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful? But anyway... could be like my personal typing teacher in high school and not look at the keyboard when you're typing.
That's what I've had to do, because if I do look down...
It's one letter.
That's what I'm wondering, though. It's one letter now, but at some point, like that texter who said, I'm missing 14 or 15 letters.
Time for a new keyboard.
Yeah. Well, either that or just learn which keys are what letters,
I'm just going to stop using the letter D.
You know, Paul, it says on the screen, don't look at the keyboard, and I thought that was the solution. If the D is worn out, then just don't look at it. That's what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah. Well, no, but...
But yeah, he types 6 words a minute, so he
does... 6 words a minute. And I was about to write a fan letter to Doris Day, and now I don't think it's a good idea.
Well, I would commiserate with you a little bit, but I know people that do Morse code at more than 6 words a minute, so...
That's disheartening.
He's a keeper, Paul, I'll tell you. Thank you for calling. Yeah, just get a new keyboard. It's $9.99. You want me to buy you one?
No, I'll save up. I'll get one. That's half my day's salary. I get $20 a day. Do I want to blow it all on a keyboard or half of it?
If you need it.
I seem so desperate. I'm esperate. I'm going to stop using the letter D. I'm done with it. On with it. We'll take a quick break and then more of us. Bill and Wenny, WGN. Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder, and I'll be the first to admit I know how ridiculous this sounds, but I have a computer at home and then this one that I use here at work, and in both cases, the letter D is totally obliterated. I don't know if I'm pushing too hard, I don't know if I'm using it too often, but I am without the letter D. So if I'm sending you a note and it's free of the letter D, you know why.
No, it would still type.
It would still type. Yeah, it would. I just...
What, are you going to make ransom notes now?
No, because I know the way to do that is to cut out letters from the newspaper or magazine.
Isn't that a cool look?
Yes.
I really like that look.
There should be a font like that. Ransom font.
I like it. All right, that's a good idea. Irene, what does poor Bill do with no D?
Well, he has to have 10 minutes and scrounging ability. He needs to take a fine point magic marker, make a new D on the key, blow, and then he has to go into Terry's or the girl's room, mm-hmm. get some clear nail polish, mm-hmm. and put it on top of the D that he's just made, and blow again, and wait 5 minutes.
You're going to have a good night.
This sounds like a very smart idea to me,
although,
Irene.
What marker do you use? A white marker, like a liquid paper type thing?
Whatever kind will show up on whatever your surface is.
And that'll take 5 minutes, and then problem solved.
Yep.
I like it.
You're blowing hard enough to dry it.
Not a problem.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Irene.
Bye.
I'm going to have to send her phone call to the Nick DiGilio show.
What do the Chicago Bears and me have in common?
You both blow.
No, but that's a better answer.
Well,
say,
she said you have to blow on
neither of us have any D, but that's but yours is, I think yours is far more accurate.
And I don't know if you've ever seen Instructables. It's this cute little website, Instructables.com.
No.
And it tells you how to make things. Like you can make, they do a lot of Star Wars things. Make your car look like Darth Vader or non-Star Wars related things. Just fun, crafty things that I like.
Right. And what's it called? I'm writing it down.
Instructables.
Instructables.
There's a little robot who is, it says, share what you make. It's it teaches you how to do things. Now, they're showing a keyboard that is also a little light on the D and the S. The mm-hmm. S is hurting there.
That one kind of makes sense to me. For some reason, R, S, E, T, those I get.
Those are the
those
numbers.
Are the most commonly used letters.
Those are the letters from Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, yeah.
At the very end when they're solving, that's the same. Everybody always picks N, S, T, L, E, R.
Surprised on the N, but the rest I can see.
N's in there. How's your N looking on your keyboard?
Sparkly. Beautiful.
Proud of it. They say to type the damaged letters into your word processor or Microsoft Word or whatever you have. Use the Arial font, set the size to 22 points, mm-hmm. and then you can have the color of the letters be white, mm-hmm. and you just print them up and then cut them out, put them on your keyboard mm-hmm. with double-sided tape.
That makes me uncomfortable because that would give way at some point. I like the gluing idea or the nail polish. Yeah, I like that idea the most. But it's going to look very. I mean, who's going to see the keyboard except for me? But it's going to stand out a little bit.
I'll tell you what. When another letter besides the D wears out, because right now that's the only one worn out.
I think I could go 5 more years without any other letter wearing out. I don't know why it's D. I have no, and I, your idea is a good one that maybe I'm resting my fingers there, but then the ones next to it would also be worn down a little bit.
Well, I use my right hand more. It's like I'm not a great typist. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I do use my left hand, but my right one does most of the work.
Yeah, I can see that.
Is the D on your phone worn out? I'm kidding.
No,
it's
it can't
screen.
Be. It's electric. You trapped me. I fell for your trap.
It was pretty great. All right, Greg, you're our last call on this. What can Bill do?
Hello? I'm sorry. Hello?
There you are, Greg. Hi.
Hello?
Hi. I love you guys so much, Winnie. I'm in love with you. They're not turning his back. So.
Greg.
Bill, I got an easy solution.
Sure.
You got to pay attention at work where they keep all the office supplies.
Yeah.
There's got to be some replacement keyboards in there. In the overcoat, take it home.
Just steal a keyboard from work.
There you go.
All right.
Doesn't cost you a dime.
That's a great idea.
I'll do that. So what?
Greg, I could never love a thief.
Oh, okay. Well, don't do that then, Bill.
No, I won't do it. We've changed our minds. Greg, thank you.
All right.
So, Greg's suggestion is just steal a keyboard from here at work.
Jimmy DeCastro's leaving. Just ask him for his.
Right.
His is gold-plated.
I know it is. I know. It's a very nice one.
He's got a D.
I know.
For DeCastro.
I know. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. I want to remind everybody in the second half, just a highlight or two, Kristen McQuarrie will be by. We really haven't discussed much about last night's vice presidential debates. That changes at 1:35. Kristen McQuarrie of the Tribune will join us to talk about all the ups and downs of last night's debate. And then yesterday on the show, we learned a little something about a town nearby, Cherry, Illinois, something that you didn't know, Wendy, and that I didn't know about the history of a town, Cherry, Illinois, near La Salle, Peru. The author of a book about the disaster that took place there.
The Cherry Mine disaster.
The Cherry Mine disaster.
Third worst in the world.
I thought second. Is it the third?
I don't know.
It was
we'll
bad.
Find
it
out.
Was bad. So Steve Stout will join us at 2:05 to talk about that. All that ahead. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's part two of our Wednesday show. I'm Bill Leff, and that's Wendy Snyder. And at any point, if you want to jump in, if you have something to say, a question, a comment, an idea, 312-981-7200 will do that for you.
Do you encounter any clowns on your lunch break?
No, this lunch was clown-free. Thank you for asking. I was the one person in the country that didn't feel menaced by a clown in the last several hours.
I feel like just the mention of creepy clowns is, that's a given.
Right.
You don't have
They're
to
not
say
mutually
creepy.
Exclusive if you're a clown. And I know, because you and I have discussed this story over the last couple of weeks. Actually, over the last couple of months at this point. I'm trying to remember the first time the story came up. But
you brought it up in England or something, and then it turned local, and then it's just been happening nonstop.
It was one of the top stories with all that's going on in the world. It was one of the, I think it was the number two story on the news last night on the news I was watching, talking about the epidemic of clown scares around the country.
Is Donald Trump behind this? Orange hair?
Maybe.
I'm sorry. Most clowns have orange hair, don't they?
Oddly sized shoes. Maybe.
Small hands.
Yeah, I guess. It all enters into it. I found this. I think you'll enjoy this. There's a website that I've never heard of before. It's SCMP. And they talk about habits of people who are not just boring, but extremely boring. Do you know, like if I said to you, do you know a guy or a girl who's just not just boring, but just odd, you'll do anything in your power to not spend time with them because of how boring they are? Can you think of anybody?
Honestly, no.
Nobody?
Why, you can?
There's been a couple people over the years that I've met that I do everything I can to avoid a conversation with.
God, I hope they're not listening.
No, they're not listening.
Would they know who they are?
Yes. Yes.
I don't, I try not to judge people.
Yeah, but there's sometimes, even though you try not to judge people, there are sometimes where it's just so obvious. Like there are some people, and I don't know what it is, but they've come up with a bunch of things to watch for. These are telltale signs that you're dealing with somebody who's overly boring, extremely boring.
Boring enough where you'd avoid going out with them.
Yes.
All right.
And they did a study at the University of Virginia, a psychology study, in which participants gave themselves electrical shocks to avoid sitting alone with their thoughts for 15 minutes. Did you think I was going to say with somebody who's boring?
Yes.
All right, so here's what they've determined. These are the habits of people who are extremely boring. Tell me if you agree with these. Boring people have unbalanced conversations. Instead of finding a rhythm between talking and listening, boring people are on either conversational extreme.
I don't really understand that.
I'm trying to think of how to simplify it. Let's see.
Like you have to do all the talking with a boring person. They don't ask you questions. It's just,
I think they're on one side or the other. Whereas, you know how a normal conversation is a give and take. I talk a little bit, you talk a little bit. I talk a little bit, you talk a little bit.
And then I interrupt.
And then you interrupt. Tim Kaine. We'll discuss the vice presidential debates in a half an hour. I think they're saying that rhythm doesn't exist. It's just kind of, they're going to do it all. Without mentioning names, this is a horrible story, and I will not mention the name. Years ago, my wife and I went out with a couple of ours, and I won't even say how we know them. We just know them from somewhere. We had
is
known
it me
them
and
for
Jim?
A while. No, no. It's Jim and some other woman.
What?
I'm kidding. So we went out with them, and we went out to this dinner, and I go, so how are things? Because we hadn't seen them for a while. So that's a good icebreaker. How are things?
That's a good one, Bill.
And then they...
You're not boring.
No, because I know how to spruce up a conversation by asking in-depth questions like, how are things? Then they told us how things were for the next 90 minutes.
And well, was there any excitement in their things?
No. Nope. It was just a little bit of everything. And every once in a while, the guy would say, well, how about you? You guys, you know what it's like. And then, like, before we could answer, they would just continue.
But see, that's not boring to me. That's a conversation hog. I would think a boring person would not hog the conversation.
They would just be oblivious to it.
Well, they'd sit there, you know, and you'd say, how are things? Oh, pretty good.
Right. And that's it.
And then you'd have to, yeah, you'd have to go, what are you doing now? Working?
Yeah.
What do you do? Stuff.
One word answers.
I would feel that's more boring.
That's more boring, I think. Here's another one. Boring people can't tell if people are engaged in conversation. Have you ever done this? You're at some sort of a get-together, a party or something, and you're talking to people, and then a guy will just come up or a girl will come up, and they just don't pay any attention to the fact that you're already engaged in a conversation. I'm here now, that kind of a feeling. But again, I don't know that that's boring. So much as self-absorbed.
See, I think there's a big difference.
Boring people can't make people laugh.
I agree with that.
Kevin Hart. I didn't say that. Boring people always do the same thing. Can I tell you why I believe that one to be the truest of the ones I've said so far? Did you ever talk to somebody and you go, I'll just use a name. I'll just say Ken, but it's just a name at random. And I'll give you a random last name. will that be too much information? So, all right. So here's the scenario. Ken, and I hate this. As soon as somebody says this to me, then I want to check out. Ken, what's up? How you doing? Oh, you know, same old, same old. Like, at least make an effort. Tell me something that's happened since the last time I've seen you. Same thing. Same day, different blank.
Right. Yeah, I don't like that. But that's somebody
good.
Who has nothing good to report.
But don't you, like, if you just live, don't you have a couple of things that you go, well, here's a little something I could share with somebody when they come up? You have something in on reserve, don't you?
No, because, like, if I hadn't seen you for a while, how are things? Oh, pretty good. Kids are in school. I guess you come up with
something.
But even
something.
That
is a start. It's a start. It's the beginning, you know? It's just not, same old, same old. That's like I give up. I don't have any.
Well, because they've been leading a boring life. That's why
the
same old, same old.
Here.
I got nothing new to report.
But even on a day, let's say you're having the most gray of days, like a day where you go, well, nothing spectacular. Wouldn't you pull something out from a week ago or a month ago and you go, hey, you know what? I forgot to tell you. I haven't seen you in a while.
But that's if you have time to spend with people. If you're just seeing somebody on the street, like you run into somebody in your lunch break and you go, oh, my God, how are things going?
Yeah.
If they'd say same old, same old, you don't have time to, like, delve into what's going on.
I guess.
Because then specifically, what do you mean? Like, my kids? How's my dog? What do you mean?
I would just, like, anytime anybody says that to me or a version of that, I just say,
bye-bye.
Wow, talk about not even making the slightest effort.
All right, if I said to you, how's everything going? What story would you tell me about yourself?
Say, none of your business. My life is my life. Stay out of it. Good day, sir.
All right. I'm not a sir.
I know, but that's the phrase.
Oh.
I would just say, good day, sir. And then I would put on my chapeau and waddle away. Because that's what people do. All right. More of these. These are lifestyles of the extremely boring. If you
want
to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right.
I don't think that's the right one, Ella.
What is this sexy thing? And I'm not talking about you, Bill.
You are. I know you are. I said to Ella, since we're talking about boring, bump in with Yanni. But I don't think that's Yanni.
I know it's Yanni,
but it's the closest I could come up with.
You're hurtful.
But I don't think that's... Who is that? That's not Yanni, is it?
That was boring to me.
It was someone named Yanni. Y-A-N-N-I.
Well, people are stealing his good name.
But that's a woman.
I know.
Yanni's a man. Last I checked, and I did check.
Personal, that's personal.
And talk about Yanni.
Oh, that's a lawsuit. All right, over at the website, and I've never even heard of these guys. Usually I say a website and you go, yeah, I'm aware of those guys. I don't know who they are. SCMP.
What does that stand for? You didn't even look it up?
No. You're way more curious than I am. They've come up with things. These are telltale signs to know if somebody is not just boring, but extremely boring. Now, some of these are obvious. This is. Can you think of a more obvious symptom than this? boring people never have anything to say in conversations.
Well, duh.
I think we figured that one out on our own, really.
We could write for this publication.
We could write for...
it's South China Morning Post.
Oh, yeah?
Did you say
not my guess. Yeah. I don't think that's true.
SCMP.com, South China Morning Post, your source for credible news and authoritative insights from Hong Kong, China, and the world.
All right. No wonder, because instead of letters, it's all characters. It's Chinese characters. I didn't know why it was written that way, but now it makes sense, Wendy. Thank you. Boring people. Again, this one fairly obvious. Boring people don't have their own opinions. We kind of knew. Didn't we know that, kind of?
Or you're talking to someone who is totally opinionated and you're scared to bring something up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is stupid.
If you haven't thought critically about what it is you think, then you're not going to offer much in a conversation, it says there. At SCMP.
I have an opinion.
What is it?
I think you shouldn't get stuff from SCMP anymore.
That's my screensaver now. Boring people don't know how to tell a good story. Again.
That's true.
It is true, but again, they're not breaking any ground with that. To interest somebody and to truly engage others, you have to be able to tell a story. Wait, let me write that down. And you have to care about that story. You also have to solicit stories out of others. And you have to care about those stories, or pretend to. I added that last part.
Yes.
Boring people can't see things from other people's perspectives.
Now, I don't know if that's boring.
That's something different.
That's someone who is opinionated and doesn't want to walk in your shoes.
Right.
Because they're the wrong size.
That's probably true, too.
Can we talk to Joe?
Yes.
Hi, Joe.
Hi. I just couldn't help but call in because this is something I deal with way too often. Boring people, it's like they never have an idea of where you want to, like if you ask them, what do you want to do for the day? They're always like, well, what do you want to do? Or where do you want to go? And it's like they can never, ever, ever come up with the slightest hint of, Like Burger King, you have to take
the initiative.
Like Burger King? That's something you would choose?
No, I'm just saying, giving an example, like something, anything.
Like, where do you want to go? Here, we'll pretend. Joe, where do you want to go for lunch today?
Yeah, like,
Burger King.
I'd love to go, like, Burger King. Where do you want to go to lunch? Like me, I'd say,
Burger King?
Let's go grab Mexican. Okay, where do you want to go grab Mexican at? I don't know, where do you want to go? I would say let's go to Chipotle or something, and they'd be like,
seriously,
well,
those are your choices, Burger King and Chipotle?
I think he's just picking names
I'm
that we would all be
Joe.
Aware of, I hope.
But I'm like that, you know, if you have a day off, what do you want to do today? I don't know.
Right.
I mean, I am not the person to go, well, I'd like to wake up early and go to brunch, and then I want to go shopping for a while, and then I want to buy two pairs of shoes.
You want to be a little spur of the moment.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, all right.
Pretty much.
Would that be an okay answer, though, for you, Joe?
Yeah, that's okay. You know what I mean? But still, like, you know, it's always people that are boring. They just never have anything to add, like, of where they want to go or... if you're in the store, for example, and they never know what they want to get. You know, they'll say, can you take me to the store? And be like, all right, what are we stopping here for? They'll be like, oh, I forgot. Or, you know.
So your advice would be have some ideas in your mind of places to go and things to do, right?
Yeah.
All right. That's fair. All right. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. We appreciate that. I am 100 times... so much agreement with you, Katie. Go ahead.
Okay. I have 6 children, and my youngest daughter, when she was 3, got Perthes disease. And
she got what? Wait, what?
Perthes. It's called Perthes. P is in Peter. E-R-T-H-E-S. It's called leg Perthes, and it's more prevalent in boys. What happens is the blood supply gets cut off to the femoral artery in the hip, and the bone gets necrosis, starts to die, and causes pain. So I got this little 2.5-year-old girl limping, you know. And so anyway, make a long story short, she was in this machine 23 out of 24 hours a day. And she couldn't walk. And this child never once in a year said, Mommy, I'm bored.
Oh, that's perfect.
And my niece would come over and say, I'm bored. That used to drive me nuts. you know what? These spoiled brat kids that are bored and have to be entertained every minute. And I said, you know, if you're bored, you're a boring person. There is no excuse for being bored. We live in the most wonderful country in the world. You're free. You can do anything you want. And I've got this little girl, 2.5 years old, never once said she was bored. Never.
That's perfect.
Katie for president. I love it.
Thanks, yeah, Katie.
Well, I tell you what, I have to tell you, I live in Rockford, and she was a patient, Children's Memorial, and I swear by that place, it was wonderful.
Good.
They were so wonderful. Yep, she walks perfect now. You'd never know it.
Awesome.
I'm glad that had a happy ending.
Thank you, Katie.
So much, Kate. I've never, I know this, you'll go, oh, come on, how is that possible? I've never been bored in my life.
I don't think I have either.
Ever. There's like a billion things to do.
You know what I did this weekend?
Huh.
I bought myself an adult coloring book.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Did you?
It's really cool. I should get you one there. It was just at the Five Below.
Now, yeah. When you say adult coloring book,
you know what
that
means,
it's just
Steve.
Naked pictures.
You know what that means. No, these, honestly, this is like such a rage thing right now.
It's funny, though, because I had this little conversation with my sister. She said, I still like to color, but I don't like the adult coloring books because it's too small. Like, I got a bunch of different, like, remember Spirograph?
Yeah, you can make they these still little, make that. I well, saw it the other day.
That's what this is, like, just black and white little shapes and I think, I can't remember what it's called, but it's little designs, really small spots. So yeah. I got colored pencils, and my sister said, I like to buy the kids' coloring books because I still like to do
sure.
crayons. And it's harder to get the crayons in those smaller spots. But see, right there, if you're bored, go get a coloring book. There's just, always something to do.
I love envisioning your sister, a lawyer, just sitting there with a squiddly diddly coloring book
yeah,
going,
well,
I can't go to court just yet. I'm almost done.
It's de-stressifying.
I'm almost done. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then we'll talk about last night's debate. What did you think? Did you think it was a clear victory for one or the other? We're at 312-981-7200. We'll talk debate right after Steve's news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. Last night, the one and only vice presidential debate was held between Tim Kaine and Mike Pence. Kristen McQuarrie is here from the Chicago Tribune to go over all the high points and low points of last night's debate. More high points or more low points, do you think?
Low.
Were there any points? I didn't watch it.
They fought. They talked over each other. I was looking at a transcript of the debate before I came down here, and whoever was doing the transcript would write crosstalk whenever they started talking over each other so much that you couldn't even really get their points. And it's all over. It's all over the transcript. I mean, it was more Tim Kaine. I think someone counted that he interrupted either the moderator or Mike Pence more than 100 times during a 90-minute debate.
We were talking about this with Steve Bertrand earlier. Is that his decision to be that aggressive, or do the handlers, the people on the Democratic side, say it would be in your best interest to take the offensive during this debate, keep hammering a couple of points over and over? And he did. Who makes that call?
I mean, he's a pretty experienced politician. I would say maybe a little of both. Yeah. He didn't seem uncomfortable doing it. It actually seemed very natural for him to continually interrupt. So I think probably a little of both. And this is the only debate between the two of them. So you've got to cram everything you want into this 90 minutes. And that's what he did. He just continually brought up Trump and things that Trump had said. The debate was more about Clinton and Trump than it was about the two running mates, which is different than 4 years ago. 4 years ago, you had Paul Ryan and Joe Biden, and they talked policy the whole time. They talked about foreign policy, Medicare. It wasn't a debate about the presidential contest as much as this one was last night.
But one of the differences is 4 years ago, you had Barack Obama, who had a very poor showing in that first debate. So the Democrats were a little bit behind in terms of debates. So you almost had to have Biden come out swinging, which he did against Paul Ryan. He was very, very, very aggressive. But in this case, the Democrats were widely considered to be the ones who had the lead because of Hillary Clinton's showing in the last debate. So why would Tim Kaine have been that overly aggressive?
I think that's the way he is. Yeah. I don't know that there's any other way to describe it. And there were lots of mistruths, is that a word, on both sides. So if Mike Pence said something that he didn't believe was true, he felt the need to interject right away. And I think they go into these debates not really meaning to answer questions. They go in there to filibuster, to say what they want to say. I mean, the very first question was, what makes you most equipped to be vice president? Kane went off on Brown versus Board of Education. Mike Pence went off on something that was not really related to his own qualifications. They just didn't really pay attention to the questions that were asked. And I did think the moderator did a pretty poor job.
Who was the moderator?
She was
Elaine, and I don't know how
Boozler?
You pronounce her. Elaine Boozler.
That would have been exciting.
From Make Me Laugh. She was the she was the moderator.
I didn't think that was the moderator. No, she's from one of the Fox Business Networks, I want to say. But this was her first debate, and I just think it showed. She was very scripted. I mean, she had lovely fake eyelashes on, and I note that because she was looking down at her paper the entire time.
Yeah.
She was reading scripted questions. She wouldn't go off of the script. And then if they were cross-talking over each other or not answering her questions, she didn't rein them in. Mm-hmm. And at times when they were about to have a good exchange, when as a moderator you do want to sit back and let that happen, then she would jump in because she had to get on to the next question.
Yeah.
So I don't think she did a super job.
Elaine Quijano. Q-U-I-J-A-N-O, Quijano.
Yeah. I'm going to trust your pronunciation.
Don't.
Cap. Okay.
I have a theory about Tim Kaine. You know, it's weird that he is playing the part of Donald Trump in this particular debate where he's kind of being the aggressor and a bully a little bit. In my theory on this is no one knows these candidates. No one knows who he is, and he wanted to make a mark. That's what I'm thinking.
He could have. People were saying the same thing about Mike Pence, that he is often rumored to be a Republican presidential candidate himself someday, and that his whole debate performance was to further his chances for the next presidential election and just like to get him kind of on a national stage. I do think it's interesting that they didn't really talk about themselves. They got into a few little anecdotes about, you know, I grew up here and I grew up there. But I mean, Mike Pence served in the House for 12 years. He served on Foreign Affairs Committee, very well versed on foreign affairs and has traveled to the Middle East a number of times, he mentioned. He's running the state of Indiana, which you may have your own thoughts about Indiana, but I mean, it has a completely balanced budget, pensions completely paid off, a bill cycle. You know, you send your bill in to the state of Indiana, it gets paid within 30 days. Unlike here, you know, you might be waiting 6 months to get paid. We are nearing by the end of the year $10 billion in unpaid bills. So, I mean, he's running a state that has a really good fiscal track record. And I just don't think he had a chance, or maybe they didn't want them to talk about their own records, because he really didn't. He didn't get into any of that.
Right.
I hate that you had to say Mike Pence is thinking about his future political career and perhaps he's running for president. God, we're in the here and now right this second. Why do we have to act or do something that's going to help us later? We're all in this together right now.
Right. He almost seemed prepared for the fact that he was going to get all of this stuff thrown at him. And I mean, he's got to be used to that a little bit by now. When you are Trump's running mate.
Oh, my God.
I tweeted out a picture of what I think probably Mike Pence's role was last night, and it was mopping. Just like, you know those people at the parade who pick up the droppings after the horses?
Yes.
That's kind of his job. He's always trying to scrub and put a better shine on some of the really off-putting things that Trump says.
But that just hasn't been last night, Kristen. We've watched this over the last couple of weeks, as they'll say to Mike Pence, what about when Donald Trump says this? And he kind of takes a minute, and sometimes he smiles or he breathes, and then he goes, well, you have to understand. And even last night he said, Donald Trump is not the polished politician that either you or Hillary Clinton are. So he almost tried to spin it in a weird way. But he's been doing that several times over the last couple of weeks or month and a half, where you just go, hey, we're on the same ticket, but we're not in 100% agreement on some of the things.
Right. I mean, he's sort of, the Washington Post has an editorial today that I think captures it best, that Mike Pence was kind of describing Trump as the Republican he hoped that he would be, but he's just really not. So when you talk, when Kaine would throw something out, you know, he mentioned Mexicans and rapists, that quote that Trump used when he announced he was running. I mean, he mentioned that four times in the first 10 or 15 minutes of the debate. So you did have Pence have a couple of good comebacks. Kane talked about the deportation force. You're going to home and school to school and rip families apart and deport all of these people. And Mike Pence said, we already have that. It's called ICE. Mm-hmm. And he's actually correct. I don't think he had a chance to make the point. But our immigration service has deported more than 300,000 people just in the past 2 years after President Obama said he was they were going to try to be more discriminatory in how they do it and not rip families apart and only go after felons. And the New York Times has done a big piece on this. The Marshall Project has. 60% of those people that we have deported were like minor marijuana drug cases. Some of them, many of them just were deported because of their illegal entrance into the country. So we're not even following our own Democratic administration's promise on how we're going to deport.
Right.
We're pretty ruthless right now.
I think so, too. Kristen McQuarrie is here of the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about last night's vice presidential debate. If you'd like to jump in with a question or comment, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Kristen McQuarrie is here with us, Bill and Wendy, from the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about last night's vice presidential debate. Do we want to take a phone call?
Yeah. Sure.
We were talking about Kane interrupting. And Dave, you had a comment?
Hey, guys. Hey. Yeah, Bill, Wendy, hello, Chrissy. Good to have you on. Good to hear you on the show.
Thanks.
In regards to last night, the majority of the interruptions that Kane came up with were he immediately apologized, which Trump never did. Secondly, a lot of the interruptions that he made were after Pence had gone past his two-minute situation and kept on rambling, and he was trying, I'd like to, if it's all right, I'd like to get into it. And Pence, I agree with you, Christy, and with you, Wendy, too, that Pence would probably prefer not having Trump as his boss. As you said, he doesn't really think that the Republican candidate is one that he really would like. In Indiana, a lot of lawns are littered with signs that say fire Pence before Trump picked him up as his vice president running mate because people were fed up with him, with his attitude and with his – he does run a decent state as far as the monetary goes, but everything else that goes along with him are not in style with what today's lineup is, LGBT, abortion rights, women's rights, et cetera. He's – thoroughly against a lot of that stuff, and you heard a little bit of it last night in the debate. But Kane did a decent job. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, do you have a particular question, or you're just saying Kane did a good job?
I think Kane did a fantastic job. I really do. He tried to point out the echoes that Pence was making that Trump makes all the time that are known to be falsehoods. You know. I mean, they're not. Your pants are on fire. Lies,
right.
At the same time, there are remarks that are known to be totally wrong.
Right.
And he just keeps repeating them.
And he did corner. I mean, his job was to make Pence have to defend some of Trump's outrageous comments. And I mean, you have to just sympathize with Pence in the sense that, I mean, he had to defend the no paying of the federal taxes.
Right.
Several times.
And the Trump Foundation, which looks like it has not really doled out money to charities really whatsoever. There's so many areas where you have to know that a more principled person, and I'll call Mike Pence a principled person. He is very conservative. But you have to think that that made him very uncomfortable.
But a lot of times, Kristen, he just said, well, no, he didn't say that. No, that didn't happen.
Which is inaccurate.
Which there were a couple times.
Me.
Yeah, there's actually a meme. If you go on the internet today, you can see all of the places where he said, well, we never said that about Vlad Putin being a strong leader. And then you have both of them saying he was a strong leader.
Right.
So there were moments like that. The fact checkers have basically caught both of them, though, in pretty equal amounts of
fabrications.
Yeah. Dave, thank you so much for calling, which leads us to Mike's question now. Mike, you had a question for Kristen McQuarrie.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just echoing perhaps what the last caller said, and that is that it really does appear that a vast amount of people that were watching the debate didn't give any concern at all about whether Pence was being truthful. They just liked the fact that he looked presidential, which is a little concerning. And the other thing was that many I did the fact checking, and I hate to differ with what's being said, but there was a significant amount more of fabrications and denials of the truth on Pence's side. And you just got finished saying, oh, no, they were equal. They were not even close to being equal. And then finally, I like to say, I'm still trying to figure out why the camera angle on Cain was looking away from the camera, whereas Pence was always, the camera was always facing him. Was that a problem on, or was that the fault of Cain not being told? Should he have known better? Or was that the camera people's or producer's decision?
No, I mean, I'm not sure what, and by the way, the fact check site that I was looking at was USA Today, but I do see what you're saying now. Politico and some others have some claims that make it out to be Mike Pence more fibbing more than the other side. But the screen that I was watching was a split screen. So the cameras were both facing them, but Mike Pence made a point, which I thought was pretty good, to actually look at voters at various times. I think Cain could have done that, but maybe he just didn't get that sort of debate prep. But there were a number of moments where Pence looked and spoke directly to the American people.
And based on what you, Mike, based on what you said, is it stage presence? Is that more important than truth? Kristen, what do you think?
That's my question, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that I was surprised that the polls came out stronger for Pence because he was in this defensive posture basically throughout the entire debate. I think it's more the interrupting. It's just such an impolite thing to do. And when you watch 90 minutes of it, it didn't look like Cain was as, I hate to say, poised and presidential, but he came off as kind of a, like having a temper tantrum over and over.
And it was also out of character for him.
Isn't that what Trump does in the same debates? He was acting like Cain, and yet people never were upset about Trump. But
no, they were. People said the same thing about Trump, that he was rude and just kept interrupting. So you would think they would learn from that.
Yeah, you would think. Mike, thank you so much for calling. Do you think Tim Kaine helped his running mate?
I think so. I mean, I here we have the whole ticket. So if you are on the fence about Trump and you wanted to see Mike Pence so that you could be a little more comfortable with the ticket as a whole, I think Kaine did a good job of making you feel still uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, because he wouldn't let him off the hook. Pence made this decision. He was running, you know, for re-election as governor of Indiana and decided instead to be the running mate in this vice presidential election. So he is rightly on the hot seat, and I do think Kaine put him there.
Can I run this past you? And this is for future debates, not just for these candidates, but any candidates. When Donald Trump is getting something said about him during that split screen and he doesn't agree with it, he makes these horrible scowly faces, right? And sometimes just leans in and goes, wrong. But usually he's making a scowly face. When Mike Pence was hearing something he didn't agree with or that he thought was an untruth, he would just kind of smile politely and shake his head no, like, oh, here it comes. More of these sort of lies. Isn't that more beneficial to the candidate to play it that way, the more serene way, and just go, well, take it from me, by my head being shaken, no, I don't agree with this, as opposed to Trump's just ridiculous faces when he's hearing something he doesn't agree with?
Yes, and it allowed the moderator to not have to go back. You know, had he interrupted or spoken into the mic, then the moderator might have turned to him, and then he would have had to actually. He shook his head no on a lot of the issues about Trump's outlandish remarks. And that's another thing the fact checkers were trying to weigh. You know, how do you fact check a shake of the head?
Right.
So do you really count that? Or and again, the moderator wasn't good about following up and making them, you know, close that loop. They would bring up a subject and then she would just kind of let them spar and then move on. You know, they went from Syria to abortion to Russia. It was a little bit
disjointed. Oh, your GPS couldn't track. Cause that's what they should, instead of fact-checking, they should try to see how many of the actual questions were answered, because no matter what was asked, they would just go off on their own tangent, and you didn't know anything more.
They did.
Well, I don't need to watch it. It's on the
now
DVR.
You know. All right.
I wanted to watch it because I wanted to find out more about these guys and who they were, and I don't think we found that out. Wouldn't that be the general consensus?
I would not waste your time,
right,
Wendy.
Oh,
no, if
right.
you, I mean, Bill was watching baseball. The Voice was on. If you were watching The Voice, I don't blame you.
Blackhawks.
I watched the entire debate. I watched, it was 93 or 94 minutes,
okay,
but on my phone, because I wanted so badly to see the baseball game.
But I knew that if I switched over to the baseball game, I would not switch back.
Even Senator Durbin was on Cochran this morning, said he was going back and forth to the baseball
game. Was he really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't even keep up who won.
It was the Blue Jays. They won 5-2 in 11 innings. They took care of Baltimore.
Is he telling me the truth? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Do the fact-checking.
Okay.
It's all on
I'm
my website.
I'm going to fact-check you right
now. It's all on our website, Kristen. That's Kristen McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune. Thank you. We really appreciate your expertise.
Thanks for having me. Very
nice. Really make sense of it all.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
You do. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then a follow-up to yesterday about a town we didn't even know existed and the horrible thing that happened 100 years ago. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Yesterday on the show, thank you, Steve. Yesterday on the show, we had a contest, and the winner is from a city called Cherry, Illinois. And we saw it up on the screen, and you were reluctant to say it because you'd never heard of the city of Cherry, Illinois. And I had never heard of the story of Cherry, Illinois. We thought it might have been a misprint or maybe a street name. And then we found out not only is there a Cherry, Illinois, but a horrible, horrible thing happened there about 100 years ago.
Yeah, in 1909, we got a little information about this yesterday. 259 people killed in the Cherry mine disaster. And as we were talking about this, the book came up. Let me just explain. They were talking about the smoke that went down into the mines, and it was called Black Damp. So we mentioned this book, Black Damp, the story of the Cherry mining disaster. And on the line with us right now is the author of said book. This is Steve Stout. How are you, Steve?
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show. Hi, well, Bill.
Hi. Great to meet you.
You need to give us a little schooling here. We were both born and bred in Oak Forest, and I was in Brookfield, and I never even knew of a Cherry, Illinois, let alone this terrible mine disaster, which changed a bunch of laws. Please explain some of this to us.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that the second worst coal mining disaster in U.S. history happened right here in the plains of Illinois. And they dug a mine out in above a town called Flat, Illinois, which is famous for Rip's Chicken. And this town is about 8 miles north of that, and it's about 100 miles southwest of Chicago. Well, when they first drilled the mine in 1905, they couldn't find the too much quality in the coal the first couple of veins that they dug out. So they went in the years to come, in the next 3 or 4 years, they went down 500 feet below the surface to find the highest quality of coal that they could. And in November 13, 1909, 480 men and boys went into the mine to work. It was a Saturday, and 259 of them never came home again.
Now, we had read something about these were a lot of immigrants, and as you mentioned, young boys, some as young as 10, went down. Is 500 feet, forgive me for not knowing this, but I don't know if that's like super deep for a mine. Is that your typical depth?
Well, it's deep for a mine when you consider they went down on makeshifts, wooden chicken-wired elevator systems that hauled about 20, 30 men at a time and really just drop you down into the mine. No electricity per se in a lot of the mine, but they did have electricity in the part of the mine that did catch fire. And they had mules working side by side with the men and the boys. So they didn't bring the mules up every day. So the mules had stable areas down underground. So some hay was brought down about 12:30 that afternoon. And it was left underneath one of the burning kerosene torches of that time. Because the mine electricity had shorted out about a week or two earlier. But there were no safety regulations, nothing to stop men from working. Teams, two average men, were paid $1.08 a ton of coal. And a good day for two guys would be 5 tons. So $5.40 between two people. So you can see why brother worked with brother, father worked with son. You can see why if the immigrants who had very little money, very little resources to work with, these people, the story of the Cherry Mine disaster is a story of immigrants in America at that time. And so two guys, $5.40 a day split between two guys. And you could see when the kids were old enough to be pulled out of school, 10, 11, 12 years old, they pulled them out of school and sent them right down the shaft. It's just amazing to think about in 2016.
But
that's
Steve,
for sure.
What exactly, for a 10-year-old boy, what would his job have been? What could he have possibly have done in a mine at 10?
He could be controlling the mules, taking the mules back and forth up and down the gangways. He could be making sure that the coal cars got to the elevator system.
Yeah.
He could pick up coal along the way and stuff. There were a lot of little jobs that could light and relight the torches in the necessary places, and bring lunch down to the men and stuff. There were a lot of jobs.
No child labor laws at the time, huh?
Not at the time, right? You were supposed to be, according to reports I've read, at least 18 in order to work there, but this became
legally, but it was always ignored and never regulated at all. So there were dozens and dozens of little boys, basically, in the mine working. But that was not seemed to, like now we would see it's so outrageous to think about. Back then, it was just business as usual. And the families needed the money. They wanted as many people from the family working together in the mines. And there's so many amazing stories within this story, too, because there was not only when the mine caught fire, people were beginning to get trapped. They had rescue teams of about 12 brave men who went down into the shaft smoking like a chimney to rescue their fellow miners and stuff. And they went down six times and pulled choking miners out of the dark tunnels, basically black underground. On their seventh trip down, they were actually dropped into the flames. And when the bell system they had hooked up went crazy with now the townspeople are surrounding the hole, surrounding the main pit right there, the 500-foot hole, heard these sounds. People were screaming, pull them up, pull them up. And when they pulled this elevator, this wooden elevator up to the surface, it was on fire with all the men. The men,
oh my God,
all 12 of them, were burning alive. And not only did it signal of the death of these 12 heroes, it signaled the death of everybody trapped underground because that was the only exit out of the mine.
All right. So we talked to somebody yesterday, and on the anniversary of this, which is it in November?
November 13th.
Is there some tribute that's paid in Cherry, Illinois?
It's small. We had a very big tribute on the 100th anniversary, some years back. Some years back. But now they have prayer services and some kind of service, but nothing big and organized. Nothing at all. They used to have, after the mine, they had annual processions and observances, but those are faded into history.
Are there still descendants living in the area of anybody from the disaster?
Not a few, but just a handful, very, very few. And I heard the show yesterday the mine did reopen after the disaster, though.
Really?
It reopened, and it was a very successful mine for a couple years. Could you imagine working back to that mine?
No.
The same people who escaped that their death that day went right back to work because they had nothing. They had nothing else. And another amazing story within the story is that 21 men realized that their path was blocked. They're deep undermined, so they're about 500 feet below the surface. They were miles away from the main shaft. And they entombed themselves. They sat there for 8 days and only had lights, only had matches, only had any kind of light for the first few minutes that they were in this black hole, again, 500 feet below the surface, miles away from an exit. And they actually just sat down and waited for help or death to come get them. 8 days later, the strongest of them said to themselves, well, we're going to die right here unless we make an attempt to get to the surface. And a lot of arguments within the groups, well, you break down that wall that we built, they're just going to let the smoke in here and kill us all. I said, we're going to die here anyhow. So these four guys, in pitch blackness, crawled over the equipment, the bodies of their dead friends, their co-workers, came upon a work group that was cleaning up near the main shaft. Imagine the word shot up the shaft, miners found alive. Now there's 259 men and boys missing. And when they brought only 21 to the surface, could you imagine the heartbreak set in again? And it just crushed the town of Cherry. It just destroyed the town. And these men were treated like heroes. And a few of them even went out on a vaudeville circuit to tell about their exploits and how they were saved from the great Cherry Mine disaster. And most importantly, the men and boys who died in this tragedy actually saved so many lives because of the workman's comp. Illinois Workman's Compensation Act actually derived from this very disaster. So before, a company was not held liable for the safety of its employees after this disaster, and the work that the legislator did, companies had to be responsible for the safety of
it. It changed the laws. The book is called Black Damp, The Story of the Cherry Mining Disaster. We're talking to Steve Stout. Steve, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to continue this. I really feel guilty.
For not knowing the story? Yeah, I know.
I feel terrible. We'll continue talking with Steve Stout. Again, the book Black Damp, The Story of the Cherry Mining Disaster, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Left, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Hey, Bears fans, or just you, Dan, grab a copy of the Chicago Tribune at Jewel Osco this Sunday to collect your 2016 Chicago Bears Fathead Tradables. Collect all eight now through October the 30th.
We are talking to Steve Stout, and his book is called Black Damp, the story of the Cherry Mining Disaster in Cherry, Illinois. Steve, we have some callers that want to talk to you, and I want to ask a question just because I don't know much about coal. You have said that there is enough coal in Illinois to fuel the world's energy needs for several hundred years.
Absolutely.
You still believe that? And
absolutely. A few, but I mean, there's safety issues about how we get it, and there's also, environmental issues of burning this coal, but they have a ways to scrub the sulfur, the chemicals, out of the coal now and make it safer to burn. But we got to decide where, you know, as a nation, as a society, where do we want our power to come from, our electricity?
And 50...
Do we want to build more coal-fired plants, more nuke plants, or how should we address this issue in the future? I mean, it's going to be a big thing that we're facing.
Is it true 50% of the electricity we use is still from coal?
In Illinois, it is.
That's amazing.
It came up
to
in
me.
The debate twice last night. They were talking about this issue. So
yes,
it's still very pressing,
and it's still very, very, very dangerous work. It's one of the most dangerous professions that you can be in. And of course, back then, black lung wasn't that much of a problem because it was picks and shovels. That's what we should remind your listeners. It wasn't mechanical equipment at all. It was one pick and one shovel at a time, so it threw up a lot less dust than these massive machines that they used out now that carve up, you know, tons of coal at a swipe. I mean, tons and tons of coal,
sure,
throwing a great amount of dust and debris into the air.
Yeah.
So in some ways, the mining was safer, but you're working with fuels, you're working with open illumination, and you're working with, very makeshift equipment, to say the least.
And there was no government agency kind of regulating the safety issue at all, and that's a huge drawback, and that's probably the reason that this Cherry Mine disaster happened in the first place, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the minute the electricity in the mine shut down, any other mine, these days, of course, no power, no work.
Right.
But down there, these men reverted back to open flames and basically candles on their hats, and they call them helmets, but they were really just kind of hats that had a little hook on it where you could put the different kind of mines, and most of the lights they had were simple candles. Can you imagine 500 feet below the surface,
no,
miles from the nearest section, working by candlelight,
no,
digging on your hands and knees?
All right.
And
well,
that's your life.
I can't even imagine that. Anne wanted to jump in here. Anne, you had a relative who worked in the shaft of in Cherry, Illinois?
Yes. He worked there not too long. He got out and started a grocery store business, and his daughter is alive and lives in Pontiac, Illinois. But he and Rip were brothers. Their last name was Galandri.
And he survived.
He got out of doing the mine work and started a grocery store in Ladd.
Well, that's
And this was after or before this disaster we're talking about? It must have been after, right?
No, before.
Oh, it was before, yeah?
was before, I believe. Hmm. I think so. But I know he was glad to get out, and so was were his family and all their members.
Of course.
Because they knew how dangerous it was.
Yep.
But when you're an immigrant and there's no jobs and that's the only job, what do?
You take it.
Anne, thank you for calling. And Jim, you lost some relatives in this disaster? Hi, Jim.
Jim Gambiani here in Wheaton, Illinois. How are you?
Hi, Jim. What happened? You had family members who perished, huh?
Well, you know, yes. All my grandparents came from Italy. And, you know, when I was a young kid, we were raised in a little town called Blandford, Indiana, of about 800 people, right on the Illinois-Indiana border. And that's all they did. They were all doing shaft mines. Both my grandparents died of black lung. But as it related to Cherry, Illinois, that was a story that we as kids growing up in that small town were all made very aware of painfully as they shared with us how other relatives had migrated down through that part of Illinois and Indiana, gone down to Cherry, Illinois to do the same thing and had that tragedy occur. So my grandfather lost a couple cousins and things of that nature.
Wow.
But when you were talking about it today, it just kind of brought back some memories. At 65 years of age, as a kid growing up in a town of 800 people who did the same thing, and they were all very tight, and distance was not that, you know, though it was far away, they were a very tight family. And so it was just, once you mentioned it today, I just said, you know, I've got to call and just kind of reminisce a little bit about what I was told as a kid growing up.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you sharing those memories. And Steve Stout, Black Damp, the story of the Cherry mining disaster. Why don't they teach this in school? I like I said, we're from here. I don't understand why this is so close to home and the child labor laws and workman's comp, why this wasn't covered in our history class.
Steve, why would that be?
Well, I work at a newspaper. I work at the Times newspaper in Ottawa, Illinois. And I say that to people all the time, that we have to get these kids interested in their own backyard. When I was taught history, it was back in the late 60s in Galesburg, where I'm from. It was really, I'm going to be honest, boring. For instance, Carl Sandburg was born in Galesburg. He's a great poet, a Pulitzer Prize winner. We should have been force-fed Sandburg. We should have had classes on nothing but Sandburg, his life, how he became this prairie poet and such, and get the kids interested in their own backyard. And I fully agree with you, Bill, that you have to get kids out to touch history, to be history. Star Rock State Park is the beginning of history here in the Midwest. I mean, that's where Father Marquette and Joliet and the French explorers first built the first Christian mission. So Christianity started at Star Rock. The first recorded history started at Star Rock. We got to tell these kids about how important their individual areas are to each other. You get them interested in their own backyard, and they'll spread out that interest to state and national and international issues.
So absolutely. And you've also written a book about Starved Rock, which, you know what, we'll have to book you for another day and talk about that as well.
Yes, I would like to come back and talk to you. I listen to you guys all the time.
Oh.
And I think it's very interesting the variety of subjects that you get on there. I mean, who talks about a coal mine disaster, a 100-year-old coal mine disaster? And I thank you for that, because you bring a lot of attention to a very important story that changed the state of Illinois.
No question.
I wish we would have known about this sooner, but thank you for shedding light on it. His name is Steve Stout, and you can look for the book Black Damp, the story of the Cherry mining disaster. And we'll talk to you in the future about the Starved Rock book as well.
We'll meet again. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good weekend. We'll take a quick break, and then our own Steve Bertrand will tell you what's in the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Great job, as per usual.
Tremendous job, Steve.
Thanks.
You know, with the Bears game, when they won, I don't know if that's going to be their only win for the season.
They'll probably win another one.
Well, I might watch on Sunday.
Oh.
And here's why.
Because the false hope.
I like appetizers and drinking beer.
I know that.
And I'm looking for an excuse. And if you are going to have a Bears party, can I tell you about this new Jewel dip that's really good?
Mm-hmm.
It's the Signature Cafe Buffalo Chicken Dip. They dropped some off today. I have been a big fan of the Jewel Osco Taco Dip. But if you like Buffalo Chicken, Signature Cafe Buffalo Chicken Dip, now at your local Jewel Osco.
All right. That
very delicious.
Good. And even if the Bears lose, hypothetically, at least you have delicious food while you're watching the carnage.
You know, I really was looking forward to Bears games so I could make chili, have dips.
That's what they should call it, chili con carnage. Wouldn't that be a good?
That would be good.
That would be the perfect food to serve up during the Bears
game.
That
really would be good. But it's no fun anymore.
I know.
But now you get to watch the Cubs play.
Yes.
I can't watch the White Sox
Friday
play.
Friday night. Yeah, I know. In 6 months, they'll be back. I predict they'll be back in 6 months. But the Cubs do play Friday and Saturday. Now, last night, I didn't get to see most of the baseball game between the Toronto Blue Jays and the Baltimore Orioles. I picked it up as soon as the debate was over. I watched a little of the post game on the debate, and then I switched over to the baseball game. So I didn't get to see this firsthand, but then they showed it after the game. There's a point in the game, and I think the score was only 2-1 at the time. I'm trying to remember what they had said last night. But there's a ball hit by one of the Toronto Blue Jays. This game was in Toronto. It's a one-game playoff between the Blue Jays and the Orioles. So there's a ball hit to the deepest part of the outfield, and one of the Baltimore Orioles outfielders, Hyun-Soo Kim, goes to make the catch, and it's right at the warning track. It's right in front of the wall, and it's a game-changing play. So all he's thinking about, the outfielder for the Orioles, is let's catch the ball and keep the score nice and close. And right as he's about to reach up and catch the ball, some fan on the Toronto Blue Jays takes what's either a bottle or a can of beer. You can't really tell because it all happened so fast, and whips it at him and just misses him by a few inches. And the other players were saying, they're saying the obvious, how dangerous this could be. Because when you're playing baseball, you're not thinking somebody's going to hurl a can or bottle full of beer at me.
And what spectator's thinking, I'm going to hurl a can or bottle of beer at a player?
Isn't that idiotic?
Yes.
I don't understand it. They were saying last night, and I didn't get to see this firsthand, because like I said, I picked up the game, I think it was in the eighth inning, the bottom of the eighth when I picked it up. But they were saying how Toronto Blue Jays fans, and I've heard this in the past, and I hate to say this because Toronto has a reputation as being a world-class city for a thousand different reasons. But for some reason, the fans who attend Toronto Blue Jays games don't understand what is and is not acceptable among baseball fans. So there have been incidents like this in the past. But really, a couple of inches one way or the other, this guy gets hit in the head. Who knows what that could do to him?
So
that
many
could
things
be damaging
could've...
forever.
Yeah. And have they found this guy? Because Toronto police are asking a Blue Jay fan who threw that beer to, quote, turn yourself in.
It's so funny you say that. I'm on Deadspin right now, and there's an article. This is written at 1:48, and it must be East Coast time, right? Yeah. So they're saying they show a picture of the group of fans, and then here, I'll show you. This is a picture of the group of fans right as it happened. But they can't really determine who of these people. They know it's one of these people, so it's down to like 35 or 40 different possibilities of who the guy was.
Somebody knows who did it. Somebody saw.
Somebody knows.
I say rat.
Yeah.
Rat them out.
So the suggestion last night was, and I don't know who put the suggestion forth, but once they determine who it is, he or she should be banned for baseball for life, which would be fine. Because this person lost their... as soon as they throw a bottle, a full bottle of beer or a can of beer at a player and almost... who knows what it could have done to them. I think you at that point have relinquished your freedom to go and attend a baseball game.
How do you keep them out of games in the future?
That's the part I'm having
you
a hard time...
You put his picture up at every baseball stadium and say, do not let this guy in?
Have you ever been to a restaurant where they have a picture of the first dollar bill they ever owned or the actual dollar bill? Sometimes they have on a plaque. And then there's a picture of a shady-looking guy because that guy wrote a bad check there 12 years ago.
Where do you eat? I've never seen the shady-looking guy picture.
Wendy, I eat in Dangertown. That's right.
I guess. I've seen the... and it's not a picture of the dollar. It's the actual,
it's the actual dollar.
Right. Why would you have a picture of it?
I don't know. Maybe the shady guy stole it. Maybe the shady guy came in, wrote a bad check, and on his way out,
guy?
He goes, I'll just take this dollar as long as I'm not allowed in your restaurant anymore. I don't know. I just, I've been in places where there's
a picture.
I've
been to the post office, the most wanted
posters. It's the post office.
I have never seen a picture of a shady guy at a restaurant. Seriously, where do you eat?
I eat in very dangerous locales.
Now, I'm sure the players are not a fan
of this. No, the Orioles players were all over this yesterday saying, I can't remember who it was. One of the other Orioles outfielders at the time said, hey, say what you want about us, as if to say,
oh, that's the losing team crying because they lost. But that's not what it is. He was saying, some guy could have killed my teammate. He said, a bottle full of beer thrown from 50 feet up, if that hits you in the back of the head, that's going to change you.
That guy needs to be arrested, and whoever was sitting there with him
right.
should turn them in.
The whole crowd, you can't come anymore, and you can't come to the dangerous places that I eat lunch either. So I don't need that aggravation.
I got to know if anybody has been to a restaurant where you
see
the
dollar. There's a picture of a shady-looking guy.
I don't know what you're talking
about. With a twirly mustache and his hair all slicked back.
Hey, Tony.
Yeah.
This is not right.
I'm telling you this, okay? I don't know where you guys get your information from. I watched the game last night. It was a can of beer, not a bottle of beer. It was not inches from his head. It was many feet from him.
Was it? Did you see the pictures today?
Like 6, 7, 8 feet away. He did see it when it came into view, but he had already caught the ball. Then he looked that way and seen it coming down.
How could that not influence him, though, to see a giant can of beer coming at his head?
Well, it wasn't coming at his head. Let's get this straight. It was 5 or 6 or 8 feet away from him.
You're an alarmist, Bill.
But he did see it. I mean, he caught it with his sight, and he looked that way. But I think that whoever threw it meant to distract him where he wouldn't catch that ball. But,
oh, that would work.
Yeah, well, it would have, but he had already caught the ball by the time it came into his view because he had caught it, then he looked that way, and then he seen it hit the ground.
Tony, if he had caught the ball and then the beer, would that have been a double play?
I don't know. Maybe that's what the manager wanted to know.
That should count as an extra out. If he holds up the ball in one hand and the beer in the other, then you go up 2 outs then.
Right. Even though, I mean, I don't care what the fans should have been thrown out, and it's hard to believe that they couldn't figure out with replay even, that who did this. But no matter what, it's distracting, and you know the other thing too is it's fan interference. I mean that's another
definitely
thing that could have been called. So no matter what, the guy was a knucklehead for doing it. But unfortunately, it seems like more and more we see more and more knuckleheads.
So it's knucklehead.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I like that.
Hey,
like
Tony,
that.
Let me ask you a question. Did you ever go to a restaurant and see their first dollar bill framed on the wall?
Yes.
Did you ever see a shady-looking guy underneath it saying, do not accept a check from this guy? Because I don't know what Bill's talking about.
It's common. Thank you, Tony.
Okay.
Thank you. That laugh says it all. There's no way.
He said yes. I heard him say yes.
Honest to God.
You said,
did you ever
see it? And he goes, yep, I've seen that. Tony and I eat in the same dangerous restaurants.
I guess. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Hey, you know, I can see that it was bad for that guy. He should get arrested for throwing something on the field during a game.
Yeah.
But let's switch to a football game. How does a guy in a full gorilla outfit get onto a field? How did he even get past security at the gate in the first place?
Yeah.
I can't even get in with a bag of potato chips in my coat or a bottle of water, and this guy gets on through security, the field, and everything, running around.
And that was at the Bears game on Sunday.
Yeah, well, I'm not even going to get into that. But
and he gained more yardage than any of the Bears running backs. How does that happen?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, he avoided quite a few defense people, that's for sure.
Sign him. We need that guy.
Well, thank you, Dave. We appreciate your call. All right. Well, USA Today is reporting that there was some racial slang being yelled at, too. Orioles left fielder Hyun Soo Kim was nearly hit in the head, as Bill mentioned.
He's Dutch, by the way. Did you know that about him?
No.
Yeah.
I did not. Orioles center fielder Adam Jones, who was also taunted with racial slurs, said he hopes the fan is arrested and prosecuted for his actions.
He's the guy that I heard after the game at the press conference saying, hey, say what you want about us, but somebody throws a giant thing of beer from 50 feet up, that could cause some serious damage.
Jones also was quoted as saying, that's about as pathetic as it gets. Jones angrily gestured towards the fans before the umpiring crew came out and security were summoned to the stands. You don't do that. I don't care how passionate you are. Yell, cuss, scream, say we suck, we're horrible, we get it, we're the opponent, we completely understand that. And then Jones goes on to say, I hope they find the guy and press charges. He's not looking. You could hit him in the back of the head and you have no idea what could happen. That's a full beer that's being thrown. Throw an octopus. Throw hats. Not a full beer.
Oh. So he's a hockey fan, obviously, because he knows those traditions. All right, let's take a quick break and then some more show for you. And then Rowan Anna will be by in just a little while. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leffen, it's Wendy Snyder. Since we're talking about baseball, I have to ask you this, and I ask you this because you have two boys who fit into the age of the question I'm going to ask. When I was a kid at Jewel, all throughout the summer, it started probably in May, and then it ran until the end of the baseball season. Every week you went to Jewel, you would get your option if you were a Cubs fan or a White Sox fan, and I was both, so I got both, two pictures of players on the team. Like, you would go, and then at checkout, they would say, are you collecting White Sox baseball players, or are you collecting Cubs baseball players? And we'd say, yeah. So then you got these, not quite 8x10, but just a little bit smaller, very close to 8x10, kind of close-ups of the heads of your favorite Cubs or White
Sox
players. Headshots of the players. Not in-action shots, like you'd see on a baseball card, but just like a headshot of the players. So my walls, from top to bottom, were everybody on the White Sox and everybody on the Cubs. And then when I went to a friend's house, they would have the same thing, all the same pictures of all the players on both teams, or some of them, you know, who only like the Cubs or the White Sox, one team. But then I was thinking the other day, like, I don't know that that tradition still exists with kids anymore, that they would put pictures of their favorite players all over their walls.
Dylan has mostly video game posters and such and Blackhawks stuff all over his
walls.
Oh,
does he? Yeah.
Michael, albums.
Oh, does he?
All over the place, yeah. Yes. Some autographed, some not.
That's a good look,
but that's what they hang up.
So it's something that means, well, all right, so it's kind of the same, but has the game of baseball, America's pastime, changed a little bit? I'm sure there's still diehard baseball kids who just are like living for every moment of this and have those pictures all over. But it was so common with almost all of my friends to just have baseball players everywhere on their walls.
You know, think back, though. There wasn't a lot going on in the way of video games, iPhones, the TV channels. So
there was no electronics revolution yet.
You had, like, maybe the, was it Tecmo Bowl football game?
For Nintendo.
I had the little handheld thing that you'd play football.
Yeah.
Well, that's more Pac-Man.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the one from Mattel where it was either electronic football or basketball?
Yeah.
Which they, you know, they sell again.
That's pretty fun. I might have to buy myself one.
And they haven't updated it at all. They wanted to keep it as retro as they could. So it's the same exact game. They haven't updated it.
And the football, I believe it was a tackle. I don't think it was a touchdown, but if you listen to the Logical song by Supertramp, it sounds like exactly.
I know.
I think it was a tackle, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the exact thing of the little football game. And Dylan's funny. At the age of 13, he really changes and rearranges the pictures on his wall because that was a kid thing to do.
Right.
I had all the Tiger Beat magazines.
Oh, did you? And all the posters or the magazine covers?
Well, the foldouts or whatever. They'd have like an inner portion of Tony DeFranco or Donny Osmond. And
Bobby Sherman.
Yeah, boy, they were good looking.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That was in my room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's I don't know if people do baseball cards and pictures anymore.
I don't think it's as prevalent because it was a given with almost every one of my friends. And it's silly because we all had the exact same pictures from Jewel, so there was no variation on the theme. It was just the order, I guess, you put them in. Bill Melton at the top because I got him in the middle of my room. That's a pretty good look. Maybe at the holidays I'll switch it around a little bit. Switch him off with Carlos May. Put him up there instead of Bill Melton. See?
It's cute seeing a little kid doing that, though, because there is a reason to where you're putting things.
Yeah, sometimes you do it by favorites, right?
That's pretty great. God, you just brought us back to being a little kid again.
Yeah. All right.
I'm going to put beer labels all over
my
bedroom.
Oh, yeah, that would look nice. What's wrong with that? all right, a quick break, and then Ro and Anna are in, so stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Ro and Anna. They're here.
Oh, you seem so excited that Ro and Anna are here.
I'm excited. We're talking about Westworld, which is it just premiered on HBO.
Which you guys both recommend. I need to get into
it. It's so good.
They're boys. I don't know.
Well, it's not really a chick thing.
We're not just boys. We're cowboys.
No, that might be a problem.
It's aimed right at us.
Yes, exactly. This is what we do. You know, as cowboys.
Right.
Anna and Wendy.
Right.
We know what this is like.
Right.
No, you know what's funny? I watched it on Sunday night, and there were females, mm-hmm. and they liked it. It was good.
I never saw or heard of the original movie.
Oh, it's so good.
So this is HBO? Yes. Is that right? HBO. Yeah. And they said like 3.3 million people watched the
number's
first
really
episode.
Good.
Like huge.
Well, it was
interest.
Michael Crichton's first big thing. Before you got to Jurassic Park and before you got to ER and all the other stuff that Michael Crichton was ever involved in. Michael Crichton wrote a couple, Andromeda Strain.
Yeah.
And this, and Westworld. And it's like these sort of very nihilistic visions of the future where technology and humanity are in conflict with each other. And so that's what the premise of Westworld is. And now they've, and it was a great movie, but Yul Brynner, you know, which is, you know,
James Brolin, Richard Benjamin,
yep,
Dick Van Patten.
Wow.
Yes, Dick Van Patten, right, exactly, ran the whole deal.
Yeah.
Dick Van Patten in a very dark, right, he presaged his work in High Anxiety.
Well, do you remember we had him on at WLS, and I complimented him on his role in Westworld, and he laughed. He thought I was making fun of him, but I wasn't. He was really good in it.
He didn't know you well enough.
No, I loved him in
like
Westworld.
He seems like such a nice guy. He's not so much in this movie.
Well, in the original, he actually, I think you're confusing him. He's not the guy who runs it. That's the guy who played Rudy on $6 Million Man.
Oh, okay.
Dick Van Patten is one of the customers who comes to Westworld.
Yes, customers, right. Clients,
but he's not,
yes.
But he's not as cowboy-like as the rest. He's not quite as adept as Dick.
He's having trouble.
Yeah.
To me, it's one of Yul Brynner's like great roles.
Yeah.
You know? And
he's
so
good.
In this now, Ed Harris plays a similar kind of role to Yul Brynner's. And
he's
Ed
one
Harris
of my
is
favorites.
Amazing in it. It's like a... an Oscar. Everybody in that has either been nominated
Jeffrey
for an Oscar.
Jeffrey Wright.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of who else has been nominated for an Oscar. Oh, Hannibal Lecter.
Yes.
Anthony Hopkins.
Yes, Anthony
he's
Hopkins.
In it?
Yeah,
oh,
he's in
my
it.
Gosh.
Yeah.
He's kind of the star of it. In
Tandy
some
Newton.
She's
never been nominated for an Oscar. But yeah,
these
the cast
are big,
is great.
Yeah. And it's very... it's a very high concept thing, and you have to pay attention to it. It's like Lost. If you loved Lost,
oh, I loved Lost.
You will love this.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I'm in.
Got something new to watch.
And it's on the
nice.
HBO. What's on your show today?
I have no idea.
Just more cowboys.
Cowboys.
Westworld. Cowboys.
Now here we go.
Got to get more cowboys on the show.
All right, Michael Steele's going to join us. The Veep debate. I'm going to say something nice about the ticket. I'm not going to say anything nice about Donald Trump, but I thought that Mike Pence did a very, very serviceable job. And Fox News Channel is reporting that Trump is mad because Pence kind of stole his thunder.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And now Fox News Channel is reporting that. Fox News Channel. So it's not like CNN is. If CNN were reporting, I don't know if I'd believe it.
But Fox is more legit on this.
Yes, but
the tension between the two running mates.
Unbelievable.
What else could happen? I'm kicking you. You're fired.
He was texting during the debate how much Tim Kaine looked like a bad guy, a villain. He was tweeting this last night as the debate was going on.
And then Pence said that shows you what, this is one of his tweets, shows you what preparation, how preparation pays off. And I wanted to retweet and I thought, I'm not even going to waste my time with this or tweet back. And I'm like, well, then maybe you should try it.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I don't get it. And today he's doubling and tripling down. We'll talk about what's going on there. Brad Garrett's going to get us at the get us caught up. He's the ABC investigative reporter. The NSA contractor arrested in the hacking plot. This is a big, big deal. And speaking of plots, have you tried to go buy or just go online and look at Cubs tickets and see what's going on there?
Yeah, we did that yesterday.
We did.
Yeah,
they're a little steep.
Well, if they're not steep, they're a scam.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. So the Better Business Bureau will be here to explain that.
One was $464,000 for a ticket.
Gosh.
There were two available. Should I put you down for one row?
I will take two.
And then write it off?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'll tell you what's interesting, though, is that the world is changing. We're also going to have our general manager on today to say to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And we're going to lobby for his office. And Violetta's trying out for the job. And so is Creepy Uncle to send his application to.
Well, you guys write a recommendation letter for me?
Sure.
I need at least three, I think.
All right. Done.
That's what millennials expect. Traffic reporter one day, general manager like a year later, right? That's how it works, doesn't it?
That's the latter.
That's how it goes. All right. You guys have a great rest of your afternoon.
Have a good show.